call the Susquehanna County Board of Supervisors regular meeting to order on this date of October the 20th, 2021. Would you please join me in the pledge of allegiance to the flag and a moment of silence? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We would like to welcome you to our 2021 redistricting discussion, a discussion we've been waiting for a long time, right?
Yeah.
And it seems like you all have done a lot of work, and the maps on the wall for you to look at. I see some of you have already looked at them. So now I will turn it over to our county administrator.
Mrs. Booker, thank you very much. And just a note for the public that's listening, this is the work session, and the regular meeting will start at 7 p.m. I got to know Mr. Sheridan will be here very, very quickly, within a minute. So to move on, let's see here. So the redistricting committee, Mr. Weaver and Mr. O'Brien, along with staff members, Ms. Harris, myself, two folks from the planning department, Jason Overstreet, who was part of the, I think, 2010 redistricting. Was it for the county or was that?
2000.
2000 redistricting for the county when he worked at the TJPDC. So he took part, and then John Michael Whalen also helped. And so we sat down with the members of the redistricting committee and came up with some different scenarios. So again, what we came up with, we have two 5-district scenarios, 1 6-district scenario, and then 2 7-district scenarios, just so the board has some options. But we understand that the sixth district wasn't a big push, but we wanted to at least put it out there so the board could kind of see what that looks like. So I think what I will do here first is I'm just going to go into really just a really quick brief timeline really quick here. Just kind of as a reminder, again, we need to do this redistricting as part of the Constitution of Virginia. We need to have redistricting done by December 31st of this year. With the census data coming in late, we're in a little bit of a push. So we've kind of got a little bit of accelerated timeline here. But again, today it is October 20th, so we're having the presentation to the Board of Supervisors. And then within the next couple weeks, we will be holding a couple community meetings prior to the board making any kind of final decisions on what maps they want to go forward with. We're still working on a few locations and everything, but we were talking about doing one meeting at the Susquehanna Community Center, and we're going to try and find another location to have one of the other meetings. Oh, thank you. It's weird. It was on before, but thank you. So that's just a little bit of the timeline. We discussed this. Again, we plan to have a special public hearing on this on December 1, and there'll be some advertisements. But tonight is really for the board and for the public to get a first glance at this. We've also put these maps on the county website, and we tried to push it out to the public on Facebook, Instagram, fan mail, that this information was available, and we're having the meeting here today. So without further ado, I will... technical difficulties here. Without further ado, we will go into first 5-district scenario number 1. And again, on each of these maps, there's a little legend up in the left-hand corner that shows one for a 5-district, what is the ideal population of each district, what all of these districts, on all of these maps, whether it's 5, 6, or 7, what is the population within the district, you know, plus or minus the difference from the ideal amount and then the population deviation. In addition, on all these maps, we try to be consistent, having similar colors for all the existing districts. And then on those districts, that's a 6 or 7 district, we have some of the same colors. The maps also contain locations of board members, school board members, and then board supervisors candidates and school board candidates, voting locations. We showed census block numbers, river features, lakes, and main roads, just so people could have a good bearing of kind of where it is. And then the very bottom left-hand corner of each map, really the blue kind of outlines what is the current district. And you can see for this one, for instance, Palmyra had a larger population, a larger growth, so we had to, and secondly, with the prison population falling out of Columbia, Palmyra had to gain some, Columbia needed to gain a lot. So again, as you see here, Columbia kind of goes into this fifth district. So let me zoom in a little bit here so I can really show you kind of the area more so that changed a lot on this scenario.
How did the prison population, how was it counted or not counted? I missed that.
Yeah, so in these maps, the prison population has been extracted, and let me say this, the women's prison population has been extracted. Let's just say that someone is imprisoned somewhere else throughout the Commonwealth, some other thing. The prison population from other correctional facilities has been put back into the district. So in every district in Fluvanna County, we did have some prison population that was put back in.
It was counted.
Yes, it was.
If I remember correctly, mine went down 1,084,
yep,
and it went up 17.
Yes. Yep. So honestly, in every district from throughout the state, I think there was around anywhere between 15 to 20 of the incarcerated population throughout the Commonwealth that was added back into each one of these 5 districts. So again, looking at this map here, as I said before, the major thing that really changed, if you remember before, Columbia kind of went up here up to the women's prison and kind of encompassed a little bit of 250 right up there. To try and kind of keep it a little more contiguous, using 15 as a good boundary, and since Palmyra needed to lose some population, really what we did in this map is this Columbia kind of moved over closer, one, into the Palmyra district, and then also moved a little closer into, it's also encompassing, closer to Lake Monticello, but it's encompassing Broken Island and, Sycamore Square, some of that area, some of the area that would just be, I guess we would say, east of South Boston Road. And then as far as the Fork Union District, the biggest, really the only change in census block, but it's a large number for the Fork Union District, there is a block, and let me zoom in a little bit here so you can hopefully see a little bit better. There is a census block right here of 326 people. This census block was added into Fork Union because, again, Fork Union needed to add some population to their district as well. So this block right here includes some of Taylor Ridge, some of Cunningham Meadows, and about half of Fox Hollow. So in this scenario, this is really the only change that occurred. There really was no change to Cunningham, with the exception of Cunningham losing a little bit to Fork Union. Rivanna District, I think they just lost just a little bit right around the outskirts of the lake, but I don't think there's really any change to Rivanna. And then again, Palmyra lost some, Columbia gained some.
What's the plus blue check mark or whatever I see down there on Route?
That's a current voting location. So right here, for instance, that's
where the Palmyra district will vote. It's not in Palmyra.
Well, no. That we're just showing where the current voting location is currently. So one thing we would have to look at, because again, the distance for this is not quite what it needs to be. So we would have to potentially, at this potential map, look at moving the voting precinct for the Palmyra district elsewhere. I'm not sure if we could work out something with Beaver Dam Baptist Church or something along those lines, but that's, in all these scenarios, we try to We tried to account for the voting districts, and we also have some ideas if we go to a 6th district or a 7th district where the voting precincts could be as well. But yeah, this one, that had to be a change a little bit. So again, maybe, there's no more voting at the Palmyra Fire Station, and that maybe that's going to have to move elsewhere in the Palmyra district.
You said part of that was with Fox Hollow. Is that road split as you go into Fox Hollow, like on the right is Cunningham, and the left might very well be another district?
Yes, yes. In this scenario right here, with the way the census blocks were, if you are on one side of
left hand,
yes, you're, other, yeah, yeah,
right. My side would be on the right hand side.
And, correct. And also on the last road that breaks off.
Yep.
The voting district follows the last road that breaks off to the right.
Correct.
So if you're on the bottom end of Taylor Ridge and you're on your right, you still voted 14th.
Yep. So
or you go to voting 14th, excuse me.
Yeah, so that's the biggest change on this. So I guess as we move through this, and let me just get the boards in some of their comments. Do you want to kind of go through all the maps really quick first and just kind of show you what's changed and kind of what we kind of took into place, and then we can kind of go back and look at the individual scenarios?
What was the growth of our population?
In the county overall?
6%. So it went up to 28-something?
No. So the population, Jason, you have the...
I don't have that handy.
I thought it went up like one something.
No, we went up to 26,200, and that's backing out the prison population. So normally, if you think we had about 1,000 of, I'm just using rough round numbers, to say we had roughly about 1,000 of prison population. Mm-hmm. So we're at 26,200 roughly with the prison population removed. So if we would have had that previously, it would have been roughly 27,200.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right, but we basically washed hands.
Correct.
And kept the population just about the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's this particular scenario. Again, Columbia moves over, Palmyra loses some, and Fork Union gains a little bit more, kind of going up along on the, I guess we'll call this the south side of 53, kind of going into partially Cunningham Meadow, not partially, partial Fox Hollow, all of Cunningham Meadows, and all of Taylor Ridge, and some of the other properties that are around there. So that is district scenario number two. Let me move in a little closer here. So again, if you look at the map here, you can see the blue is the current districts as they stand. And again, same thing, Palmyra had to lose population, Columbia had to gain population, and Fork Union also had to gain population. So in this map, what we did, we looking back at some historical things, Columbia used to go down to the Rivanna River before. It used to follow the Rivanna. So what we did is, in this scenario, we moved Columbia all the way down to the Rivanna River to use the Rivanna as a good natural feature, as a good natural border. That still didn't give Columbia the population it needed, and again, Palmyra still needed to lose population. So again, you can see 15 is right here. Let me zoom in just a little bit. You can see this red line, 15 is right here. So what we had to do, we moved Columbia a little further west into the Palmyra district. So again, Columbia...
is that North Boston going to...
That is, that's North Boston.
Going to 600.
Yep, Union Mills Road going to, South Boston. North Boston and South Boston is basically following along there.
Yeah, that's North Boston the whole way to the river.
Yep, and then let me move a little... Let's move up here a little bit.
With this one, did Columbia move closer into Fort Union? Which one were you moved to? West, east.
That's one of the other, that's one of the other scenarios.
That's one of the previous ones that they made up with, without the information.
Yeah, but that was one of the other, I don't know if it's the 6th district or one of the 7th district scenarios. There is where Columbia did move, yeah.
Okay.
So again, for this one, you know, Columbia basically goes over from Zions, basically takes Troy Road, goes east of North Boston, and then east of South Boston Road, and then again kind of stays, you again uses the river as the boundary up to that point.
Okay. See the numbers.
Okay, yeah.
This one.
Yep.
How, with the first one that was 5, these are lower numbers?
No, again, for these are, remember, these two maps are both 5 districts, so the 5 district, the ideal population in each district is 5,262.
Okay.
And again, each one of these districts, you know, again, working with the census blocks, and the odd thing with this is, you know, we can have some census blocks that are 300, and we have some census blocks that are, you know, down to 1. So it's really a puzzle game to try and make sure we can get things to fit in and not trying to break up, you know, maybe historical neighborhoods and things like that and using natural features as a boundary.
That's the biggest thing that I said in the beginning was, you know, the representation part.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only issue I see with some of these, you could have somebody representing a district never been a part of the district.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. So.
And that. I mean, anyway, it'd be hard for them to win, but it could happen.
So
stranger stuff is happening.
So you're talking about 4 years from now.
Well, I guess in 4 years from now. Yeah. But so, I mean.
Yeah.
So going back to this one, like I said, so we spoke about how Columbia and kind of Palmyra changed. Again, Columbia went down to the river and then moved over further west into Palmyra. In this scenario, and this is kind of slightly similar to what we discussed before, again, Fork Union needed to add population. Fork Union, in this scenario, goes up in Gaines, Broken Island, you know, kind of going into the lake by Sycamore Square and gaining some of that area. That was, you know, in this little area right here, that was probably a population gain of close to 1,000 people.
That's what I'm saying. You're talking about having a good percentage of the population. Well,
yeah.
And
so let's go down. Let me just kind of just make sure I've addressed everything that I needed to with looking at the map. And then if you see right here too, there's one other section. Fork Union did eat up a little bit into Cunningham too, right in this area. So let me move over here. So in here, Fork Union does go over to Longacre Road and is north of Rolling Road too. So there was 3 blocks in here of about a population close, I think it's a little over 100. That Fork Union also gained as well. Because again, Cunningham District did need to lose a little population.
So that's Rolling Hill?
This is Rolling Road, yeah, right here.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Miss Johnson's farm would move in there. Yeah. Well, not Miss Johnson, but down there where the beaches are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the second 5 district, and again we tried to keep them you know roughly the same with the population that we're dealing with. So that's 5 district scenario number 2. I'll go to 6 districts. Again, we only did one scenario for just 6 district because the board didn't really ask for that, but we wanted to give an option for it. Okay, so for this district, let me zoom out. So again, for this district, so the ideal population for this scenario was, for 6 districts, was 4,385. So if you look down at the map here, again, the blue outline shows what is the current district lines. And again, probably the biggest change in this with the six district scenario is we really kind of made a, I guess we'll call it a Rivanna, you know, our Rivanna East district and another Rivanna West district or new district, whatever, or whatever the board decides to call. But it was really more so splitting the lake on each side from an east-west scenario. Again, in this scenario, Palmyra still needed to lose some of their population. Again, Palmyra and Cunningham in the census had the largest growth, with Palmyra being the largest growth by far. So again, for this, we continued to use 15 as a good boundary line, kind of coming down between Palmyra and Columbia. So again, we first started out by using the Rivanna River, moving Columbia further south to the Rivanna River. That still didn't give Columbia the population that it needed, so we moved the district line south, so it basically follows just north of 6 and 15. So Columbia is kind of all kind of contained within 15 and 6 in that part of the county.
And the voting precinct in Palmyra is the same?
In this one, yes, it is.
Is Columbia cross Route 6 near Columbia?
I'm sorry, what's that, Mr. Sheridan?
In this, does Columbia cross, the Columbia District cross Route 6?
No, it does not.
Because I'm looking, looks to me like green is red, the road.
Here, let me zoom over here a little bit.
Yeah. It's still north of the river.
Yes.
It doesn't cross the river at all.
Correct. It does not cross the river at all. Yep. And let's see here. Let me just look over at the map just so I can get a little bearing here. Again, in this scenario here, Fork Union again gained population up in that block, that 326 block of Taylor Ridge, Cunningham Meadows, and partial Fox Hollow. And with this one, you know, as we pulled a lot of population out of Palmyra from the Rivanna and new District 6, the Palmyra district had to kind of move a little further south in this scenario. So we originally tried to keep them north of 53, but we still had to gain a little population. So they went to a few census tracts just south of 53. Kind of, if you think of like where Pleasant Grove Park is and kind of that area, some of those neighborhoods in that area.
Does that go to Brewerton Lake?
Let me see here.
Yeah, it goes to Brewerton Lake, and it looks like it takes a person off Brewerton Lake and
Slaughter's Fork. Yep, correct.
That's all right there.
Yeah, right here.
At the very beginning.
And then really what it's following too, if you see this line coming through right here, it's following a utility easement.
Mm-hmm. The big yep. utility line.
Mm-hmm. So again, you know, from in here, again, taking some this purple used to kind of be, well, this purple more so used to be Rivanna. So we took that away from Rivanna, and Rivanna really kind of has the north side of Lake Monticello, and then Rivanna gains Broken Island, Sycamore Square, and some of that area. And
where's then, the main gate right here?
What's that?
Where's the main gate right
here? Oh, let's see here.
Main gate's just kind of like next to that green marker almost.
Yeah, it's almost right, right around.
I'm just trying to think about all the new housing right there.
Oh, it's all there, yeah.
Yeah. So again, you know, Rivanna gains some from in here. And then again, we have the new new district, which would be here, which includes some of Lake Monticello. There are some oddities with the way the census blocks are broken up. So you can see you've got some houses here that some of them that are even across the road in this section of Lake Monticello. Some would be in the new district, and some would actually stay in the Palmyra district. And again, not a lot of change with Cunningham. The biggest change with Cunningham was Cunningham lost some population kind of from right in this area to Fork Union. And Cunningham also did lose a little bit of the lake too, because in our current district, Cunningham has a little bit of Lake Monticello in here, and I think a little bit of the exterior of Lake Jefferson Drive.
And they cover the exterior of Jefferson Drive, yeah, like half of it.
Northwood covers the other half. Everything on the outside.
So just looking
outside of Northwood, right?
Yeah.
I think Northwood is pretty important.
Right now, it goes from Northwood all the way down to Slice Gate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then kind of around, and then Palmyra starts.
So again, as you see here, again, Palmyra comes down into Fork Union. Fork Union gains here from Cunningham. Again, you know, the new district adds a good bit from Rivanna. And then, you know, Palmyra does need to move down a little bit.
Now, where does Palmyra come into Fork Union? Where is that? It's
right around 53, just around 53.
Yeah,
and it's Spruce Hill Orchard.
Yeah, that's
everything
probably
just south of 53.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking back here. Yeah, so if you think about right here, here's on Ruerton Lake Road, mm-hmm, coming down. I think Fruit Hill Orchard is that right around up, here?
Right there where the short line is.
Yep, right so around
right there.
There.
Right there is going to be about where, because that's Stagecoach Hill.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's where
I'm
going to
hike.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the farms, mm-hmm, Greg Slaughter's farm, right over there.
Yep. So that's where Palmyra comes down to. So this is District 6. Again, we only did one option for this one. So I'll move to seven district scenario option. Let me just zoom in here a little bit so we can look at the population again. So again, for a seven district, the ideal population of each district is 3759. And again, here you can see the population numbers in this scenario for each district. And the population deviation. And again, in all these scenarios, with the plus or minus and the percentages, we are well within the appropriate percentages that we need to be. So let's go and look at the map down below here first in the bottom corner, so you can just kind of see what changed. Let me just make that a little bigger here. So I'll kind of talk this through a little bit here. So again, in this scenario, we did use a scenario where we pulled Columbia down to that Route 6 and 15 border, but again, it needed to gain a little bit more. So it did pull a little bit, roughly going down to Central Plains and Shiloh Church Road is really kind of where this little point comes down to. And I can tell you with this map, really kind of where we started is the redistricting committee figured, okay, well, where are the areas where kind of the big population growth is? So knowing that it was really in Palmyra and Cunningham, we really started off with this kind of orange district right here, District 7, and we're basically using Meechum Creek as the boundary. I don't know if you want to call it south or southwest of Meechum Creek, and kind of pulling into Cunningham and pulling a little bit of the west side of Lake Monticello, kind of looking into where Colonial Circle is going to be and looking at a little bit of the north side of Lake Monticello. That's kind of new District 7. And again, then we kind of split Lake Monticello up a little bit more. Again, in this scenario, the Rivanna District pulls down into Broken Island, pulls down into Sycamore Square, you know, gains some population there. And then in here, new District 6, kind of, let me kind of go down to the map so you can see. Again, new District 6 really kind of stays north of 53. So you see here, you know, new District 6 goes kind of down to from South Boston going west, 53 and north, Garden Lane to the east, and kind of running almost to the lake a little bit, and does actually have a little bit of this side of Lake Monticello too.
Where's the traffic circle on that
map? You talking about for the which one?
The new one.
The new one is right up here.
Okay, so not all that. So that's Effort Church right there.
Correct. Right. Yeah, that's where the new traffic circle is.
That's Cherokee section.
Right? Yep.
Well, not that one, but the one up to the right.
So in this model here too, again, as we needed to pull some more out of Palmyra and trying to create some districts where there's greater population, you know, we really had to pull a lot out of Palmyra in this one. So in this scenario, Palmyra actually goes into Columbia, into the Columbia district a little bit more, kind of following Bybee's Church Road, going almost all the way into the county line. And again, the Palmyra district stays going down to basically Palmyra, and the voting location would be the same in this one. So let's see here. And again, as we talked about, we need to gain a little bit in here for Columbia just due to the numbers. So it kind of follows Shiloh Church Road, coming back to Central Plains, and then going back to 15.
Bethel Church.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see, let me zoom out here. And again, in this one, let me just look at the map just so I can refresh my memory. Again, in this one, Cunningham loses a little bit.
No, they...
Oh, they. I'm sorry, they gain a little bit out of the Fork Union District right up here. Just because we had to pull away so much of Cunningham up towards the north for the two new districts.
So where did they gain at Fork Union? I can't see.
At Fork Union, let's only go over to the map. So right up here, and I can go down and look at the roads, that's really the biggest area that they're gaining from Fork Union. So that would really be...
there's some lawmakers.
Yeah, let me zoom in just a little bit here. If I remember correctly, it's right here. This is Bell Farms Lane. Mm-hmm. Let's see here.
Or is it Brand?
Yeah, it's really gonna be down in this area, Bluebird, Bell Farms Lane, some of that area,
mm-hmm.
Kind of right in this area. That's really where Cunningham District pulls a little bit from Fork Union. Let's go back down here just so you can kind of see the overall, so kind of see what pulls from where. Again, Palmyra pulls into Columbia. Columbia moves a little further south of where it currently is, and kind of uses 15 and 6, but pulls a little bit out of Fork Union.
Is that where Columbia pulls West River East in this one?
East River, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
And then Shiloh Church and Central Plains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking of the Little Dixie.
In this one, you lose.
No, I don't. No, maybe it's the seventh. No, you don't go below Dixie right here. So right here, again, here's Dixie. Columbia stays just north of basically 6, all the way down to the Rivanna.
Central stays in your
district.
Okay, I see
8. I can read east.
That East River Road,
that's
right here.
Dixie,
yeah.
That's Dixie.
Yeah, right Dixie right here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Central stays in your district.
And yep.
The middle school and Abrams go to mine.
Mm-hmm.
So that is any, and then I'll go into the last one, and then we can, you know, try and get into some more specific questions that the board has. So the last one for 7 district. Let me go back and one more thing on this one here, just to make some comments on this one too here. In this one, really, when you look at this one, you really have, what did we say? One, two, three. You really have three districts that are that kind of come into Lake Monticello now on seven district scenario number one.
But Palmyra still touched part of it, didn't it?
No, not in this one. Palmyra does not. That's going to be in the next
north
one.
North of the river.
So just in seven district scenario number one, you know, you get Lake Monticello that is touched by three of the districts. In seven district scenario number two, again, population numbers haven't changed in this one. So what we created here, and let me move up a little bit and zoom out. So you almost have what we'll call, for a lack of better terms, what's called the Zion's Crossroads District or something like that.
Bybee,
whatever you want to call it. You know, what we tried to do in this is try and have three districts that really touch 250 and kind of pulling from there, kind of from where the, you know, the future.
I'd keep that one, if you did that, I'd keep that one Palmyra, since it has Palmyra, and make the other one Troy.
It could. And like I said, we didn't really try and get into names. We just call it new district. So again, on this one, looking at the map, you know, this one had, you know, a little bit of a change. Again, you know, this new district, you know, eats up a little bit of Palmyra, pulls into Columbia a little bit more, goes down and kind of encompasses a little bit more of Fork Union. And we can look, I'll zoom in a little bit more. Again, we tried to pull out from the population centers around the lake, because that's kind of up in this area around the lake is where some of the biggest growth areas were. So we do, again, still have two districts kind of around the lake, Lake Monticello. Again, we're kind of looking at the west, kind of the west side of Lake Monticello. You have the east side of Lake Monticello. You actually have part of this new district that is also part of Lake Monticello, and you also have a little bit of the Cunningham district that is a little bit of Lake Monticello. So in this one, you have 1, 2, 3, 4. You actually have five districts in this scenario that kind of has some representation in to parts of Lake Monticello. You know, although, you know, some of them are certainly smaller than others.
And I think that's the key
of
my defense against it.
Sure.
And what's that?
I don't. I don't like the second district.
Okay. Well, what's your defense against it?
Well, we're doing about 1, 2, 3, 4 very highly populated, powerful districts in one part of the county, and three. Well, we have two, Fork Union and Columbia. So yeah, that rural, different.
I would like to say it was a really easy, and like I said, I don't certainly want Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Weaver to chime in as part of the redistricting committee, and you know, kind of through what we went through the process and kind of looking at this and.
Yeah, I think it's very challenging because you have to take the census blocks into account, and the census blocks vary quite a bit in size, from some being, you know, 600 and some being 8. And then you also have to look at the growth areas. And I mean, realistically, you're going to see the growth areas continue to be on the west, sort of northwest side of the county. So that makes it challenging to try to divide those districts up by default, because you've got 45% of the county concentrated within about 2 miles of the lake, including the lake, of course, in a sort of a diameter. You're just going to have a concentration of districts when you divide it up that are trying to draw from that population growth there. And that's, you know, it's you're right, Mrs. Booker, that you're going to see counties or districts like Columbia and Fork Union being affected, if you would. But by the same token, in some of the other maps, we bring Fork Union closer into those population centers. I think that in the long run, as the county grows, to me, it's evident that certainly we will have to go to probably seven districts in 10 years from now.
Yeah,
but then after you go past that, I think the second map gives you a little bit more flexibility in the seven district map versus the first map because of the fact that you have this new district from which Columbia and Palmyra and Cunningham and Fort Union can all really take from that new district as you try to adapt to those numbers accordingly. Whereas I think that district map, or map 7 number 1 has much more limitations in terms of where you're drawing those centers. So this, to me, this is ultimately a more flexible map when you look down 20 years down the road, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, 10 years down the road, you're going to be sitting here with a brand new drawing board.
Oh, no, I know, but I'm drawing the same. Yeah, I did.
And I've said it the whole time. I just want to make sure that everybody gets equal representation. Now, we can say we have 3,000, and I'm not trying to make it us and them. But to me, when you have 5, if Lake Monticello has that area of population right there has a say in 4 out of 8, that's 80% of the voting districts for 45% of the population.
And which map are you saying?
4 out of 5.
4 out of 5, yes. As it stands right now.
If we go to the 5 districts,
if you
have 45% of the population that could have a really huge say in 80% of the districts.
Yeah. I mean, you could. I mean,
absolutely. So that's what I'm talking about when I say just trying to make sure that each voice is heard equally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I don't disagree with that. I mean, you're
not
talking.
I looked at the one map on 5, and I'll take wherever you send me. But I know that doing behind the wheel, I ride around with kids all the time. And most of the kids that live outside of Lake Monticello have driven everywhere. Mm-hmm. Most of the kids that live in Lake Monticello go, if I don't drive to Charlottesville or Zions Crossroads, they have no clue where they are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could end up with somebody representing the entire east side of the county that's never been to the east side of the county.
But what are you going to do about it?
I'm not the best mind, but that's why I've been a proponent of 7 and just trying to make those percentages equal.
It becomes less equal, actually.
Stand 5.
I mean, in 1 you have 5 out of 7, right? Yeah. In the other one you have 4 out of 7. So, in the two maps, I mean,
this one
has 5 out of 7 districts touching.
4. Yeah. This one has 5.
Or 5.
Yeah, well, yeah.
5 touching.
Yeah, touching.
Well, in this one, the Cunningham district really doesn't have a portion of it. I mean, it touches it.
And I think it's a misnomer to say
it's got a little bit around Turkey Sag, Bridlewood area, kind of that part. Golf course area, I guess I would call it maybe.
In what, the 3 election cycles since the last time redistricting happened? And again, you can say lake, but really it's people that live near the...
Just the population center. Let's call it the population center,
right. So you had Bob Hollenbrook, that represented part of the lake. That was it.
Then you had 2, did you?
Then you had, Bob Hollenbrook and Joe Chesser. You know, those were the ones that you'd say are closest to the lake population.
Where was Lynn Gardner?
That was previous to the redistricting. You have myself, of course, and the 4 of you, which really don't touch on the lake. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if we stayed at 5, you'd have 2 people that represent the lake and 3 people that represent outside the lake. So, I mean, it varies based on who runs and who wins, of course, right? And I would certainly say in the case of Mr. Fairchild that you could say he represents the population center, but of course he's grown up in Palmyra and Pluton his entire life, and so he knows the entire county very well, and I think he would consider himself more Pluton than lake, if you're going to put it that way.
Well, that means population center. Right. It's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
So are there any one of these maps that the board wants to look at a little closer, ones that maybe the board is kind of leaning to? Again, from our standpoint, we don't really have the best capability as the redistricting committee saw kind of during some of the process. You know, we are using a software. It's not the I don't want to say it's free, but it is free. It's a free software system, and so it doesn't have all the bells and whistles that some of the more complex softwares had. And it's not that it would.
But you didn't need it.
We didn't need it. We didn't. And like I said, it just has some limitations of doing stuff on the fly. So if there's anything in any of these scenarios, the board wants to see different.
These are all the blocks. The census blocks that I see, all the smaller areas, yes. And the small numbers.
Yeah, all the numbers kind of represent all this, just the census blocks. And so again, let me just kind of zoom in here a little bit. Just
like on 7, which is A and which is B? How are you identifying that?
When you say A,
B is the one that has a big purple block in there.
B, okay.
Yeah. Like if you kind of follow the outline of the road and the. We could always put a map out that didn't have the roads. We really wanted to include the roads.
That helps us know where we are.
Yeah, it really gives some more geographic location of where the blocks are. But with the roads gone, you can kind of see the true census blocks. But again, roads are part of some of those census block boundaries.
So the numbers inside the... Does that represent how many people
yes.
are in there?
Yes, that's the population in that census block.
It's the total adjusted population.
Total adjusted population, thank you. An adjusted population means, like for instance, Paul Meyer, we removed the women's prison, but in these areas, say, I'm just going to use a number, say Cunningham had 15 individuals that are incarcerated somewhere throughout the Commonwealth. Those numbers are put back into Cunningham in one of these census blocks. Mm-hmm. So again, we were dealing with some odd census blocks. We could, here's a census block 641 people. Here's one 166. I'm sorry, 161. Here's a census block 7. So you're kind of really trying to use roads, natural geographic boundaries, and trying to preserve the overall character of each of the voting districts.
Show them the census block for that kind of wraps itself around the lake too. I think it was 308 or something like that.
Yeah, there are some weird census blocks, because there's a census block that kind of goes all throughout, intertwining in the lake that covers the whole lake that's pretty big.
I guess you don't have the software pulled up, so these are PDFs.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, when they talk about their frustration with the redistricting from last time, is where they had to end up going to vote.
Sure.
Which is why, again, when you're looking in terms of down the road, the more you shift people around, the more likely you're going to frustrate folks from that standpoint. It's just a human nature, I think, that we're habits of creatures, so. I think that staff did an excellent job with the tools that they had available, and really with, there are some fundamental limitations. If you try to draft the maps in such a way that you don't have people that are being drawn from the population center, as you put it, Mr. Sheridan, it makes it very hard to kind of come up with the numbers that you need. I think, of course, you're going to see more growth down in the Troy area, but Columbia and Fork Union, in part, and parts of Cunningham, and are certainly going to maintain sparse population growth because they're part of the Fork
Union. How much did Fork Union?
Preservation districts. When you overlay the preservation maps, they go right through that whole swath.
I'm sorry, Tom. I thought I saw. Percentage of how much Fork Union grew.
Jason, do you happen to have that information?
Which percentage of what?
Fork Union, how much Fork Union grew the population?
Population.
Why?
End up with the big
one. Not really, because the blocks aren't quite the same.
That's only a matter of time.
You were also going to look at the race distribution.
So let me talk about this. So we finished this, and like I said, not an excuse, but we finished this basically Friday evening at 5 p.m. So, Jason, John Michael, Callie and myself, but they've really been trying to crunch the maps, get the maps ready, get stuff that we could have online. And literally just today, we were able to start going in and start crunching like some demographic information.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have some numbers. We're not, again, with the limited software that we have, we're not 100% comfortable with the numbers, but I can tell you, you know, roughly, you know, let's just say with five district scenario number one, it looks like, let me see here. Jason, so the population, so 23.4% for Fork Union, what's that number represent again?
That is the African-American population under that scenario.
Okay.
That's under that scenario. The one I saw was 15.3%.
That may have been one that we had done earlier when we were using projections before we had the census data.
Yeah. Again, we could start talking some of the information, but I would, to give you more concrete stuff, I would really
that's
have
fine.
Like a little bit more time so we could really get into that a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And anecdotally, I can say that you have seen significant, I don't want to say significant, but you've certainly seen in the last 5-10 years a lot more African Americans move into the lake than previously. So you're seeing some growth in that area of the African American population.
So,
I'd like to know what that is.
We will certainly get you. We will certainly get some better demographic information. Again, just on the short time frame we have working with software, we just have a time to get you concrete information by today. You know, really at this point, you know, as we discussed, you know, we want to have some community meetings here within the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
For citizens to be able to come. Again, we've got some maps, you know, around the back of the auditorium here. You know, we have the maps online, and, you know, we thought we would have to kind of do the same thing, but, you know, have them kind of around the room so people could see them a little bit better. And so we're still working on some dates and times. We have some preliminary ones, but we just really need to get that ironed out here in short order, really by probably tomorrow.
Can people come here to look at the map?
So no, because during the day it's closed.
It's
you know, what we could potentially do is we could potentially have some things. We could potentially get some stuff set up in the administration building.
I'm saying the Morris room, possibly.
I would hate to block up the Morris room because that's the only room we have for any meetings or anything like that, but we can work on, because we were talking about getting these maps on some big boards and easels so we could have them, for one, if we're going to the community meetings or just kind of out there available if they want to look at them during the day. So we can, we'll discuss what is a good location.
What about the hallways? Maybe here? Put one of them here?
We can't, if remember, you know, we're a little limited with kind of commingling, you know, the public coming in because of social services and some confidentiality issues with being in here. So no, this would not be the best location. I think we could potentially do the admin building or
entrance there. You go in.
We could. Unfortunately, that door doesn't lock right there, so someone could go right out that door and go right into the social services area. So.
Hey, Eric, it's Kelly.
Yes, Kelly.
We could probably put some at the library.
We could do the library, and there's lots of, we could probably set some, that's a good one. We could set some up.
In your room?
Yeah, in the library or somewhere. I mean, the library meeting room's filled with books, so probably not there, but in the library itself, we could potentially do that too. And like I said, we could just coordinate with Ms. Hoffman on that. So are there any particular scenarios that the board wants to get a little closer look at from what we've shown already, if you want to drill into anything? And again, we weren't planning on doing any on-the-fly changes, but if there's anything that the board would potentially like to see on any of these scenarios, we could kind of, you know, after here we can go back and take a look at a few things. But I think, you know, between the redistricting committee and staff, you know, we've really tried to provide you some really good options for some of the districts.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to just be able to go back, sit down, look at them, and try to take them in, and then if we come up with anything,
Get back in touch.
Yeah, again, you know, from the board, we gave, you know, all five board members have you know, 24 by 36 copies of these maps for your to view. And then again, I think if we probably get them somewhere in the public, if someone wants to come and look at these big maps a little up close and personal, they could do that.
How do you explain to people who come look at the maps where the changes are? Do you have any explanation where you say scenario number three, Park Union is doing this, Columbia is doing the other? Unless you really know the county, you wouldn't. You just look at some lines and some pretty colors. How do you,
Do we have any verbal narrative about what we did?
Right.
At this point, we do not.
We do not. And the other thing is, what would be the advantage or the disadvantage to staying five, although we have two maps of five?
Yep.
What is the advantage or disadvantage on six? There has to be a reason why you go to seven, do two maps of seven.
And again,
you know, and I know you don't, I mean,
no, you
I'm
know,
not asking too much. I mean, that would be, you know,
no,
I can ask you though, I can sit down with you.
There are lots of good questions. I mean, you know, certainly Mr. Payne spoke about, you know, we are under a little bit of a unique circumstance that with the five districts, we got it after, you know, really, we got the census data late in the game. So we are really making a really valiant effort to try and get this done in time. And we've got a tight timeline to meet the December 31st deadline per the Constitution of the Commonwealth. You know, Mr. Payne discussed, from a legal standpoint, some issues that he had noted from five to six to seven.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that? You were on, you've been on boards that had five or six, I don't know if you've had it on seven, have you been on board?
This board has never, in my experience, had seven.
Right.
Before the last redistricting, it had six. And, it was two, because the Rivanna District had two members in the last
district.
Before that, there were six districts. And so you ended up having six supervisors, but five districts.
Mm-hmm.
The obvious objection, if you want to call it that, is to the six district scenario, because that lends itself to tie votes. The others, as tie vote is possible, but it's less likely, because that would mean that somebody was abstaining or somebody was absent, something like that. If all members are present and there's six members, any even number, it lends itself to tie votes. I think I told you before that in my view, a properly drawn five district map will be easier to administer. And less inclined to have somebody challenge if somebody wants to challenge.
Because also, it's less costly to the county.
It would be less costly, because you're not with the seven district scenario. What I think the statute calls for is for the existing supervisors, the five or whoever it is, would appoint the other two,
right.
And that would mean there had to be a special election for that. Those supervisors, and special elections expensive. I'm not telling you can't do it, mm-hmm. And I'm not telling you there aren't arguments in favor of it, but I see that the ones that come most readily to mind are are those, and there are others, but and of course one virtue of the five district scenario is you can make it as little changed as possible. So if you have people are used to seeing five supervisors, and the question, for example, if you change the number, are you going to change the planning commission as well? Because the planning commission is prescribed, it doesn't have to have five members, but you change the planning commission when you change the board.
And the social services board members. As well, I believe, too, correct?
Social services board is easier. Yes, that's true.
School board, yes.
And the school board. It's more complicated. And I guess I'm just a simple-minded kind of guy. Mm-hmm. It's easier to have a simpler solution than it is a more sophisticated one. So again, I'm not telling you can't do it or you shouldn't do it, but that's the way I view the pros and cons of the various districts.
Yeah, I guess you could go up to 9, couldn't you?
Sure.
I don't know that there's any limitation on the number you could have.
But
one thing I would
get a basketball team.
One thing I would point out to you.
That I'm not sure. I know they have 7 now.
Who?
Louisa.
I don't know.
You know. One thing I would point out to you is Louisa is a much bigger county.
They have about 10,000 population more than we do.
And it's physically bigger, too. It's a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. The one that strikes me is Albemarle. Mm-hmm. Because Albemarle is
6.
I think it's four times the population of Blue Valley. Yeah, and it's probably 3 times the area.
Yes.
And they have got made do with 6 members.
6 members.
Almost as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. I think when I was first working where Albemarle, there were actually 5, and they added one more.
That long?
It's pretty long.
Well, you look at Loudoun County, Fairfax County had 9, and they have 400,000 people.
I think part of it's also, I mean, what I've learned through this process is that part of it is also driven by the demographics themselves. You know, as if you have a very concentrated area of development or concentrated area of growth in your county, then by nature, as that grows, the counties that are less populated have to draw into that center at some point in time. That's just the reality of it, unless you're going to see growth happen in Columbia and in Fork Union. Without them being closer to that center of population, you'll never be able to really keep up, you know, well, as that grows. Because you got to match the number. You got to be within plus or minus 5%. So,
well, that's what he's saying. We're going to have to do that if we stay at 5.
Even at 7,
we go from 50% of the county to now we'll have 75% of the county. Mm-hmm.
Even at 7, you're still bringing people into that area, right? Yeah. I mean, they're all still tied very close to it.
Yeah.
Just one thing to address here on this 5 one district scenario ones. So just a few things to note on this one. So on this one, we would, in this option, we would have to determine a new voting location, because again, Paul Meyer was down at the fire station here. We would have to get a new voting location in this particular scenario for Palmyra.
Number 2 with 5, is that the same?
No, let me go back to scenario number 2. I don't believe that's the case.
It's
the same case. In both of these 5 district scenarios, we would have to get a new Palmyra voting location.
Mm-hmm. And in one of the scenario 5s, Palmyra no longer is part of the lake, if I recall correct.
Let's see here.
I thought you just cut the edge.
Not this one.
Maybe that was the 6.
I think you're getting into
number
the
6.
It's yes. Number 6. It's number 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Or number 3. The 6 map.
Yeah,
that was an interesting process for sure. And I mean, I did not understand the impact of the census blocks prior to this. In my mind, it's sort of like, oh, well, you can carve it out this way or that way. put 5 blocks or 6 blocks anywhere you want to, but the reality is you can't. You're locked down to these census blocks.
As long as they're contiguous, you're...
Can you pull up the 6?
Yeah.
One down?
Sure. So again, just remember on this one, the 6, we basically, you know, again, we had to pull from the population center, so you got the two Rivanna districts that make up the lake and a little bit of the Cunningham district.
I think one of the tensions that, you know, I don't want to say tensions, but one of the struggles that the county's always had is between growth and no growth. And it's easy to assume that you think, okay, if the lake is growing, that everybody there is pro-growth. We're actually now seeing quite a vocal, you know, level of people coming out saying that they don't want to see that growth any longer. They really feel that that area has grown too much.
A lot of people have come in this area because of the lack of growth, strong growth, that is.
Right. So
you know, they want the rural.
They want it, and they're looking for it. And when they see, you know, a lot of quick development, even though they're part of our planned growth areas, they still reject it, and you know that's a challenge that I think all boards will always have to face.
But we can control some of it.
Yeah, we can control it. And I think that's the thing, is that okay, it just depends on the person that's elected at the end of the day. You know, it really does.
Depends on the majority.
Discussions with
of course it depends on the majority, right?
We've had discussions with the public recently over the village lane, mm-hmm. and. People are not happy. They've come to live at or around the lake because they like the rural atmosphere in Fluvanna County.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as, can't really think of the right word. I don't think it's two factions. We want growth, we don't want growth. I think a lot of us get along quite well and we come here for the same reason. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, if I wanted rural, I would go to Columbia and Clark Union and Kenstall. We can give you 5 acres, 10 acres, 20 acres, if you truly want rural. Now, if you want to go and build your house with them 5 feet from you and you still say, I want rural, we got 2 developments in Fluvanna County and Clark Union, Forest Glen and West River East. Area. I don't know how many, maybe 2 or 3 houses. When you go up Shiloh Road, look at all the growth out there with people building with 5 acres mm-hmm. of land.
Now, so, the Forest Glen is the one down there next to, which one is that?
You're going up 6, going past Charlotte. Now, Floyd's on Hayden Martin Road. Yes.
That's right, that's one before Hayden Martin. Which mm-hmm. one is it that's down there near Fluvanna Baptist?
That's the east, that one's
grown up quite a bit.
It's a nice,
there's a lot of homes in there. Nice.
And so there, and that's, and I don't know if people,
because I drove down one of the roads and there was one empty lot.
Yeah, we need to have some bus doers of Fluvanna County.
Say the word.
There's rural, I'll tell you that. You want rural, there's rural.
Well, we got plenty to look at now.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, I think staff really worked hard at doing
that. Oh man, absolutely appreciate all the work that was done by the committee and everybody else.
Yeah, like I said, a big thanks to Jason Overstreet, who's here, and John Michael Whalen from the planning department. They really helped to make all this magic happen and move the blocks around and the piece of it and you know. Ms. Harris and myself, you know, kind of knowing some of the areas and just kind of, you know, trying to stay, you know, kind of within the intent of redistricting and what the rules are and really kind of understanding, you know, the county and the districts themselves. So again, you know, it's probably by no stretch of the imagination perfect. But I think there's a lot of thought and a lot of process that went into it to provide these options.
I know in 2010 when Mr. Weaver and I were on that board, they brought us a map with 3 districts. all districts as well.
You know, it would be an interesting map for staff to see. I was just thinking about it, is one that highlights, say, you know, by color, you could almost do it, the census blocks that have, say, a population of 25 and under, between 25 and 75 and over 75 or something along those lines.
Oh, I'd go over 100.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, I don't know. When they play with it, they'll see what is easiest to kind of view.
You know,
it'll give you an overview of, where can you actually try to draw a district around, because, you know, it's easy to get lost in all those little numbers and say, oh, well, here's one that's 50, here's one, you know, just be easier.
Yeah, we could potentially have just this map with nothing on it, just the census blocks and the numbers.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that's what I'm basically saying. I think that would make it very obvious as to, you know, if there are any alternatives where you could try to find those.
So we're saying over 100 or 75 or what?
Well, I mean, 25 and under, maybe 75 to 25. 75 to 125. Well, I was going to say, you said there's some of them that are...
There's a few that are maybe... Well, there were a couple that were like 600.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'd have them 200 plus or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think they can kind of try a couple of different scenarios and they'll figure that out.
And where does this bring us then?
It gives you a quick overview in terms of where your census blocks are, so that if you were to try to draw different lines, you know, how you can do it based on where those larger
25 here,
are.
50 here.
Yeah.
You take 50 from here, you got to have...
I know, but that's not going to change 25.
Well, directly across from the one that says 219, which is looks like Painesville Road. Yeah.
219.
Go up to...
Yep, you just had your...
You know, that's Painesville.
Okay, Painesville. Go up to 250.
Yep.
And go to the left a little bit, to the right a little bit, where that 48 is, I think it's 48.
Straight up.
Oh, 40, yeah, there's 40. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that is Beaver Dam Farm, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
And, I think you all know this, but there was a request for 600 homes.
Yes, ma'am.
Right there, but we didn't have the water or the sewer. Mm-hmm. So that's... would make that change look very different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
So they walked away from it because the infrastructure's not there.
Right down there to the left. What's the last yellow block down there in that map?
Where?
Keep going down to the left there.
21.
Down.
Oh,
go down
there.
Down. The last one below the broadband right there. What's that number?
237, that's...
Well, that 237 is going to become about...
That's going to become more.
Colonial
Circle. It's going to become about 1,100 because that's going to be the two subdivisions, the one that's already being built or in the process of being completed, plus the other one at Colonial Circle.
Mm-hmm.
So that 237 is going to become, before we do this again, will become 1,200.
Right. Which is why I was saying that other 7 map is kind of concentrated right there.
Well, I mean, like I said, we didn't concentrate it there for future stuff.
No, I know you didn't.
But that's just where some of the numbers lie at this point. But that area is certainly going to grow around the population center. It's, you know, we still have some homes. That they probably didn't even hit the census population in the Village Oaks, Island Hill, Colonial Circle that have been approved.
Which runs across from the main gate?
That's Village Oaks.
Okay, yeah. I mean, those were just being started, built when this was started.
Yep.
Right. So even some of those don't have the full count of the build-out on those areas.
And how many was that? 125?
For which one? Village Oaks?
Yes.
125.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I can
plus another.
Well, Sycamore still grow a bit. They still
got... You're a math man. Yep. You got a math man.
Hey, Eric.
Yes, it's Kelly.
I think one of the things to also keep in mind is that when the census did this time, we had half the block that we had 10 years ago. So the way that they distributed the population in the block also significantly changed how we were able to manipulate those, keeping in mind all of the other things, contiguous, compact, all of that. We had less to work with in terms of discrete blocks that we could get to. So I think that's also important to keep in mind.
Why did they get rid of some of the smaller blocks?
We don't know. We don't know. It's not affecting us quite as much as it's affecting some other counties who are seeing some housing impact, affordable housing impact of where certain census tracts and things like that are. It didn't seem to affect us quite as much, but it is being felt across the Commonwealth.
Another unintended consequence.
Yep. So like I said, if there's anything else the board wants, kind of what we intended today, to just kind of give you an overview, kind of discuss, kind of walk you through, talk to the board about kind of what changed, you know, see if there's any takeaways we need to do. We had intended for this, for the work session, to go from 5 to 6:30. It's about 6:16 right now. And then, you know, take a break for some food and
close session,
and then go back to the regular meeting at 7 p.m.
Okay. Now, when is the public hearing, November the?
Let's see here.
December.
Yeah, I think December 3rd.
The first meeting of December, I believe.
Yeah. December.
Yeah, let's go back to this. Again, so proposed district maps. So we would at the next board meeting, November 3rd, we would request authorization to advertise a public hearing, but the public hearing, December 1. We would hold a special public hearing on December 1. So December 1 would be a 5 p.m. meeting, and then we would have we'll figure out what time the public hearing, but we most likely want it to be in the evening.
Eric, I want to acknowledge that in the chat there was a request that when we share the demographic data, that we share the demographic data as we begin pushing out the information to the public. And then the reasons for redistricting, that we get all of that out. And also that any info that is shared, we provide information in regards to any proposed precinct changes as well. That came in through the chat.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's gonna, certainly if we had 6 or 7 districts, there is no doubt gonna be precinct changes. I think the only precinct change that we're looking at in both of the 5 district scenarios is only for the Palmyra district.
And that's probably almost a welcome one.
Well, the Palmyra district is probably going to be, they're not going to be driving down to the Palmyra firehouse. It's probably going to be more.
Depends on what portion of the Palmyra district you live in.
Well, that's true. That is true.
If you got to drive from Slice Gate to Kent's Door. Those people won't be happy.
Yeah, again, there is
a lot of people.
No purpose.
We can't make everybody happy.
No. You change it for one person, maybe the other one won't like it.
Is trying to just keep everything balanced with the population areas and non-population areas.
As long as we are meeting the rules, the intent of what is required from redistricting, we're meeting what's required from the Constitution, and we're hearing the feedback of the public and the board and the redistricting committee, and we're keeping, as Kelly said, contiguous, compact, following natural features, and I think, again, we're not going to make everyone happy.
Alrighty, well, I think we've gone about as far as we can go. We need to go ahead and get to closed session. Do we need to make a motion for closed session now?
Mr. Chair, I move the Levanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A8, Legal Matters, the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing legal matters.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Levanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, One of the only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended. And two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the amendment.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Egan?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We're now back in open session. I will now ask us to begin this meeting of the Spokane County Board of Supervisors. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, folks. All right, do we have an adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Sure.
Man, we're jumping with this stuff. I love it. All right, we got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Seeger. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Dawson.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll do the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the contingent settlement agreement with A.G. Dillard, Inc., dated October 7th, 2021, related to the Giants Crossroads Water and Sewer Line Agreement under IFB 2018-03, as modified by those notices to proceed and change orders 1 through 7, as modified the agreement. Such contingent settlement agreement being a negotiated settlement and compromise related to issues under the agreement, and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the contingent settlement agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now, Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Let's have a few things to report this evening. So one, I think someone's got a birthday coming up here pretty soon. I'm not going to ask how old he's going to be.
Well, I can't call somebody at this table old man anymore. I'll be playing catch up.
Again, happy early birthday. So coming up here for Halloween, Saturday, October 30th, Parks and Rec again is going to be doing the Halloween festival at Pleasant Grove Park. There will be a semi-haunted trail and trunk or treat starting at 6:30 p.m. until 8:30. If you plan on handing out candy or treats from a trunk, you must register your vehicle's trunk at Fluvanna Rec Desk Monday through Friday. Again, the Parks and Rec Department has done a great job and put a lot of work into having a great event for the community. So those that want to come out, please come out. And if you want to hand out candy, please register through Parks and Rec. So I know this has been on kind of the board's radar a little bit. So if you remember, we entered into the BPSA Fall Pool 2021 for the Carriersbrook and Abrams Academy project upgrades. The board had approved to move forward with that. The VPSA bonds actually sold yesterday. So again, we had those broken out to give two different amortizations. So for the school bus financing, the local all-in true interest cost was 1.19%. And the Abrams Academy and Carriersbrook Elementary project, the all-in cost on that was 1.99%. So again, we originally budgeted, thinking it was, on a conservative basis, 2.75%. We knew it was going to come in less, and what the board approved in the resolution, this came in far, far less than what the board approved. So again, that's a great outcome for the county and to get these projects done. And on to the next one. I know I got some gentlemen with badges out there that'll be wanting me to, and the finance department to work on the sheriff's vehicles and all the other stuff here shortly. So like I said, that was a great thing for the county. And then just coming up here, I think that was the last one. And then just coming up, so BOS next meetings, short one here. November 3rd, we have a regular meeting at 5 p.m. November 17th, we have a 7 p.m. regular meeting. And then December 1st, we have a 5 p.m. regular meeting. And I also, before I break, I want to introduce to you all the new Director of Economic Development, Ms. Schmeck, if you would raise your hand. So Jennifer Schmecks started with us on Monday and I've been busy keeping her active, showing her a lot of the properties. We went to the Quad County Business Summit and Quad Tank Competition today. And like I said, so she's just getting up to speed and we're happy to have her from a neighboring county.
You said her name is Jennifer?
Jennifer Schmeck.
Spell her last name.
S-C-H-M-A-C-K.
Oh, just like Okay, thank you. Welcome.
Oh, and one update. The December 1st, should be December 3rd, I believe. Mm-hmm. So we'll double check that just to make sure. Anyway, for sure, November 3rd and November 17th. And we'll, you see the first, Ms. Solis? Well, anyway. We'll come back to you on that one. That's all I have.
All righty. Thank you very much, sir. We do appreciate it. All righty. I will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the podium. State your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak at this time?
Good evening. My name is Chi San Bae. I am originally from South Korea, and I am now an American citizen living in Fairfax County. For cultural reasons, Chinese people believe that a person's body should remain intact after death. As a result, people in China rarely donate their organs. Yet suddenly, in the early 2000s, Chinese hospitals began advertising short wait times for organ transplants. Where did all these human organs come from? Extensive and credible reports have revealed that the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, has been killing prisoners of conscience, most of them Falun Gong practitioners, in order to sell their organs. A prominent international human rights organization recently stated, forced organ harvesting has been committed for years throughout China on a significant scale, and the Falun Gong practitioners have been one and probably the main source of organ supply. You may find additional documentation in the handout we provided. China has become a major international center for organ transplants, and many American patients travel there for this purpose. A Northern Virginia resident recently received an offer from China for a kidney transplant for $50,000. And an Orange County resident told us that she had traveled to China to receive an organ transplant. The practice allows Chinese hospitals to provide matching organs to transplant recipients on demand. In one case, a hospital obtained 8 kidneys in 8 months for a single patient. Because his body rejected his first 7, here in the U.S., the average wait time for a single matching kidney is 3 to 5 years. This issue should concern us here in Fluvanna, because members of our community who need an organ might consider traveling to China for a transplant. Can you imagine finding out after the fact that your new organ was taken from a person who had been imprisoned for his religious beliefs and then executed so the CCP could sell you his organ? You may be wondering why you have not heard more about the horrors of live organ harvesting in China. This is primarily due to the Chinese regime's extensive influence operations over media companies throughout the world and its tight control over the flow of information into and out of China. For example, have you ever seen the special insert called China Watch that is included in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post? This section is written by the CCP, which pays millions of dollars to these two newspapers so U.S. policymakers and business leaders will read communist propaganda disguised as news reporting. I am here today to ask the Flavana Board of Supervisors to pass a resolution to condemn the practice of live organ harvesting and to alert our residents and our medical professionals about this issue so they make an informed decision before traveling to China for an organ transplant. This action will save lives, educate residents, and bring to light the hidden atrocities committed by the Chinese communist regime. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Please step forward.
Good evening. My name is Tiny Tang. I'm originally from China, and I'm now an American citizen living in Fairfax County. I would like to offer additional comments on forced organ harvesting in China. Falun Gong is a spiritual practice involving gentle exercises, meditation, and the virtue of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. It was introduced to the public in 1992 and quickly gained popularity because of its many health and wellness benefits. By 1999, almost 100 million people were practicing in China alone. Because of Falun Gong's immense popularity and its emphasis on spirituality, the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, considered it a threat. As a result, the head of the CCP launched the persecution of Falun Gong in July 1999. Countless practitioners have been tortured, killed, or disappeared to this day. My mother was arrested 6 times in China as a Falun Gong practitioner. The CCP refused to give her a passport, and they even forced her to appear on TV and publicly condemn Falun Gong. My father had a stroke while she was in prison, and since my mom wasn't there to take care of him, he soon passed away. My friend Chun Yanwang is a survivor of the CCP's persecution who lived right here in Virginia. The police in China killed her husband for protecting her. She spent 7 years in prison for telling people about Falun Gong. She was also blood tested to determine the compatibility of her organs for a potential transplant. Since the persecution happened in China, the organ transplant business immediately increased in China. So far this year, a total of 22 local governments in Virginia, including Louisa, Green, and Spotsylvania, passed a resolution to educate the residents about this practice. And today, I ask you to do the same. Please introduce and pass a resolution to raise awareness of this issue. We are submitting petitions from some 100 local residents in support of this request. We are requesting this resolution not to involve a local government in foreign affairs, but rather to benefit the health and well-being of Fluvana residents who may one day find that they or a family member will need an organ transplant and find themselves at the bottom of a list whose wait times are measured in years. You are the level of government that's closest to the people. I can speak out as an individual citizen, but I'm asking you, the floor Varna Board of Supervisors to join your voices with mine, because our voices are louder together. The resolution will help prevent Fulavana residents from becoming the unwitting accomplices to the murder of innocent people. It will also help educate our citizens that the Chinese people and the Chinese Communist Party are not one and the same. We would appreciate the opportunity to meet with you in person to provide additional information and discuss this request. Thank you for your support of human rights and religious liberty. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Do you have anybody online?
No, sir.
Seeing none and hearing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. We have no public hearings. We will move forward with action matter A, authorization to advertise a public hearing for an ordinance to amend Chapter 20, Taxation of the Code of the County of Fluvanna, Virginia, by adding Article 10, Cigarette Tax. Mr. Dahl. Yep.
Mr. Board, members of, Mr. Chair, members of the board, sorry. So again, you know, we've been through this process before. As you know, we joined the Blue Ridge Cigarette Tax Board, you know, back in 2020 during the General Assembly session, effective July 1, we got the ability to levy a tax on cigarettes. State legislation encouraged to do it on kind of a regional collaborative approach, which we have been going through the process through the TJP acting as kind of the administrator, and we've been working with some of our neighboring counties to do that. I know it's the last meeting before the board approved to move forward with the Blue Ridge Cigarette Tax Board, and now this is just really an amendment to the ordinance to move forward and kind of finalize that. And again, the board held that public hearing on September 15th, approving the formation of that joint authority. Since the meeting on September 15th, additional counties have approved the formation. Those include Augusta, Albemarle, Greene, Nelson, and Orange counties. In the city of Charlottesville and Madison are also considering participation as well. And this regional board is really modeled after Northern Virginia board, which serves 19 localities. So again, the TJPDC, we've been meeting with them. We have discussed what this looks like, what type of revenue and what the operational expenses would be. You know, for first year operation, we're estimating one-time expenses at around $217,000. In addition, some of those expenses would include stamp development, technology, salary benefit costs, you know, a vehicle, tracking software, and establishing a reserve. You know, and we had discussed that year one, the net amount to the county based upon a 6-month implementation cycle of around January 1 was going to be right around, you know, potentially, you know, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year, but would range in the amount of $190,000 to, you know, maybe $280,000, $275,000 to $300,000 once it's fully implemented. So one, we need to do the county code amendment before January 1st, 2022. So again, this is just an authorization to advertise for the public hearing, and we would have the public hearing on the November 17th, 2021 meeting. And I'd be happy to pull up the draft ordinance or advertising if the board has any questions. But I think we've talked about this at good length.
Any questions from the board? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve county staff and the county attorney to prepare and advertise a notice of public hearing to be held on November 17th, 2021 at 7 p.m. for a proposed amendment of the Code of Virginia, of the Code of the County of Fluvanna, Virginia, Chapter 20, Taxation, and add a new Article 10, Cigarette Tax.
Second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now go forward with appointments, board, commission, and committee appointments. Mr. Solis, I'm betting Mr. Dahl is going to take this one over.
I'll take it. Again, there's just one representative for the Parks and Rec Advisory Board, and it's Madeline Falk, with a term to begin October 1, 2021, and September 30th, 2024. And I can pull up for the youth representative. I can pull up her application if the board wants to see it.
I'll just add that she's the great granddaughter of the gentleman we may have the Morris ring named after.
Ernest. That's
nice. Interesting. Yeah.
Ernest Morris.
Been a neighbor a long time.
I move.
Go ahead, ma'am.
I move Board of Supervisors approve the following board committee appointment of Miss Melanie Falk. Madeline Falk from 10/01/2021 to
9/30/2024. Second. Motion's made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Presentation. Louisiana County Public Schools CARES, ARPA, and ESSER Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Funds. Oh, Dr. Gretz.
Yes, sir. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, sir.
Thank you for having me here tonight, Mr. Dahl. Thank you. I'm delighted to bring you some information about how federal money has come to the schools. I'll share with you the amounts, the timelines for expenditures, and some of the things that we've applied to spend it on. And if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to entertain those. So you'll see with each slide, we've got the title of the fund. You can see the grant term. So this first fund, ESSER 1, we're calling it, is to be spent through September 30th of 2022. So for each one of those, we'll have that. The total allocation was $298,293. For each federal fund that we receive, whether it's coronavirus relief money or any federal grant money, there's a mandated set aside that we have to make available to private schools. So each one of those carries its own calculation. In this case, you can see the amount of the private school set aside. And I'll back up just a little bit. So in my mind, this money came to us in three buckets, ESSER 1, ESSER 2, ESSER 3. Each one of those buckets had sub-applications that could be done, sub-grants.
Dr. Gretz, one thing, ESSER stands for elementaries, what was it, secondary?
Elementary, secondary schools, education, gosh,
relief.
I can't believe I can't remember that. I've had so many acronyms blowing at me.
Here you go. Here you go.
Elementary and secondary school emergency relief.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Gillum wouldn't have made that mistake. So each one has sub-applications that I'll share with you as well. I kind of saw these as ESSER 1 being related to, it was right at the beginning of the pandemic, and it was related to the very pragmatic needs that schools might have, PPE, that kind of equipment, hand sanitizers, things like that. Certainly technology and ways that we could connect students. The second round was related to supporting more of the academic needs, and then the third round was related to all of the above with some special focus on unfinished learning, addressing learning gaps. So you can see the activities for which we have purposed this money. I won't read all these again, but essentially you'll see it was what I said, PPE, support of sanitation, working with hotspots and devices to make sure the kids who were quarantined at home or were actually at home because the schools were shut down could access learning. Chromebooks, devices, internet connectivity to support just the logistic needs. Do you have questions for me about this one?
I guess I'm a little surprised that private school would get that money set aside, since I assume they're there for profit also. I think it's a good thing, but sort of surprises me that the government's jumping in on top of something like this.
That's a great comment. That's true of all of our federal funds. So we get Title I, Title II, Title III, Title VI, all the federal grant money that we receive over and above and before we ever got any relief money, there is a portion of it that's set aside and made available for private schools. For example, Title II money oftentimes supports professional development for teachers. So if there are activities that we're offering that would be of interest to private schools, if they indicate they do want to participate, we make that available to them and the materials available to them. That's kind of how that works.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Vision funds, this was kind of a subset. It's a separate application, but a subset of that first round of grant monies. And these were related to technology specifically. So we use these, again, you can see the grant term, the total allocation of $30,000 the private school set aside. And we use these to both purchase the hotspots and to support the data plans forthcoming for those students that didn't have access otherwise. Okay, CARES cleaning money. So this was the grant fund to support specifically cleaning supplies, which is exactly what this went towards. I won't read all this to you, but stop me if you, yes. So we had cleaning supplies. We have specific money set aside for or purposed for facility support. You can see the amount. You can see what we did with this. Specifically in the, each school had to have an isolation clinic in addition to the clinic that supported just routine nursing in the schools. So these adjustments were made in there. All the schools were outfitted, except for one, with touchless water bottle fillers because the water fountains weren't able to be used. Water bottles were provided. I understand this predates my time in Fluvanna, but were provided to that school that didn't have those upgrades to the water fountains. And then air filtration, bipolar ionization might have come out of this as well. But, okay. This is money that was specifically to support special education students. iPads were purchased for students that were learning at home that had the need for additional communication support. School nutrition, this was in most places, and from the application, most places used a big part of this money to support nutrition workers working during the shutdown to support meals. They were preparing meals to be distributed, to be picked up. In many cases, driving, I believe in Fluvanna, driving those to homes where families weren't able to get to the school to get meals, in addition to just purchasing food. Okay, so that was all related to the first round of ESSER funds. Coronavirus aid relief.
I wasn't going to ask you.
Okay, so the second bucket you'll see is much more related to supporting actual in-class instruction. As students return to hybrid learning, meaning they were here for 2 days a week, and then in some cases returned into a more robust attendance, the total allocation is $1,210,697, so it's a significant fund. This was largely purposed to support personnel, and you can see it spread over the life of the three fiscal years. I really think that was a smart way to spend this money. We don't know exactly what kind of needs we'll have over the long haul, and I think we all understand that the deficits and the impact, both academically and socio-emotionally, the kids have are not going to probably be solved in the course of 1 year. And so this gives the ability, I think, to take a long view approach to that. I won't read all these positions to, yes?
Yes, what happens at the end of 3 years then? They don't have any more money. Where do you go from there?
Well, at the end of 3 years, we would either find a way to try to support some of these positions going forward, or we would realize them through attrition in our budget, absorb them in the budget through attrition, or in the worst case scenario, you'd have to let folks go.
And Dr. Gratz, just on some of these slides, am I assuming that basically a third of that amount is kind of being set aside for every year? A third of the 1.2 roughly?
Yeah. So the budget was done to support those positions over 3 years. And I believe of all these positions that you see, there is one of those reading specialist positions at the elementary level that we have not yet been able to fill. So that money's still sitting there. Okay, and just real quickly, you'll notice there's also money that is set aside to support summer programming that hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
Technology subscriptions, again, more support for connectivity, the data, the Chromebooks and adapters. Now, for every student to have exactly one device purpose to them, and more PPE and just cleaning supplies. Okay, when the ESSER II funds came out, there was a separate application that was made available to divisions to specifically support academic achievement gaps, unfinished learning. That amount for Fluvanna was $327,000. We applied for that. We received it. That was right at the heart of my transition here when that happened. We used that to reduce class size in many cases across the board. Again, this is largely supporting personnel costs over the life of that 3 fiscal year period. If you have any questions about any of those things, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I don't want to read them to you unless you want me to.
And you can change those bullets if needed, right? You don't have to stick to that.
Yes. So in all of these cases, now in the first case, the ESSER I money has been expended. That's done. And had to be spent before you could even apply for the second. All of these applications are done understanding that they can be amended moving forward. So in any of these positions that we've not been able to fill, there will come a time where we'll have to make a decision to either keep that vacant, try to fill it, or to repurpose those funds for something else. And we're having those discussions all the time.
What about your after-school remediation for students? I'm thinking that the remediation is going to be after-school hours. What about those children who don't have transportation to get home? Are you doing anything to help them, help the kids get home?
That's a great question. We've got money purposed for not only the programming but also transportation.
Right.
What we've done right now, and this is based on feedback from teachers and families, is kind of postpone the after-school programming simply because we're finding that kids, especially at the younger levels, but frankly at all levels, by the end of the day, they don't really have the...
They're so not used to being in that routine.
Yeah.
You know that
really
better than
that routine all over again.
So I do think there'll come a time when we will open that up, probably sooner rather than later. But we're also going to look for some creative ways to do that.
Yeah, and once we went into the community, teachers went into the community, met the kids and church families, and that worked for a while, but even that kind of fizzled out eventually. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, good questions. Okay, the ARP funds specifically, another big round of ESSER III funds. This is the third bucket. 12 core content teachers to lower class size ratios. We've not been able to fill, I think, 4 of those. But the rest are deployed, and again, we'll figure out what to do with that money if we can't fill those positions. Really, this is almost all tied up in personnel costs and stipends to address unfinished learning.
And Dr. Gretz, just maybe one thing too, as you spoke about before, when we were doing the Abrams Academy renovation, I know you said that there was some ESSER funds that you all could put towards some of those improvements. Is that coming from this, from the ESSER III or ESSER II?
It'd be coming from any of the items that haven't been funded, those positions that haven't been funded. I think there's one from ESSER II. And 4, maybe 5 from ESSER III. That's one of the purposes that we've considered that we would be able to supplement. Yeah.
Virtual Virginia. I thought they still have Virtual Virginia.
Yes, ma'am.
And these are teachers who are not Fluvanna teachers, but
that's
teachers
right.
From other areas. Okay, and you have to pay for that. You have to come make a contract.
Yes. So what happened, Virtual Virginia has been around for a long time. It typically was just at the secondary level, and it usually was used for credit recovery, high school students that needed a credit to graduate. So when the pandemic happened and schools shut down, and then we realized that we were going to have the need for both in-person learning and a really robust way to reach students remotely, Virtual Virginia partnered with the Department of Education and widened their platform, pre-K through 12, made it available, I don't want to get in the weeds with this unless you want me to, but made their learning management system available to all school divisions that couldn't otherwise purchase one. If you've done any kind of graduate work recently, you would have used something like Blackboard or something like that. So they made that available, but it is a there is a per-seat tuition that you commit to. So they're getting ready to do another round of enrollments next month for the second semester. So people could have chosen that in the first, and then they'll have the opportunity to do that again.
Do you have a number of kids that are doing that? Oh, man.
I know that there are about 46, in addition to the ones we have right now, that want to do it second semester. I don't have the number for how many are doing it currently first semester off the top of my head. Fluvanna used, their approach to that was not to hold two options out to the families and say, which one do you want? Mm-hmm. But rather to say, we're coming back to school 5 days a week in person. If there's an extenuating circumstance, you can go through an application process, and we'll go through a selection process to decide who does Virtual Virginia. As you can imagine, there's several things that have to be in place for that to be a good option for people. Yeah. Not the least of which is good internet connectivity. Yeah. But also you have to be somewhat self-directed, or at least in an environment where people can support you.
Dr. Gertz?
Yes.
You add all this up together, it's 4.7 million, a little more than that. And this enhancement to your budget, does that mean that the Fluvanna taxpayers will be relieved in some way?
That's an awesome question. I think it would be premature for me to speak on behalf of the school board, where obviously we just started that process.
Project.
The difficulty that I will say, I'm just speaking for myself, that there's obviously been an influx of positions that I think Fluvanna probably has hoped for a long time. Reading specialists, math specialists, class size reduction. I think the difficulty in thinking about how that would impact a request for next year is it really is, even though it's over the life of a couple fiscal years, it's a one-time shot of money. So it's not recurring funds that would impact the budget. But I really don't feel like I can speak on behalf of what the board would bring you. But that is definitely a consideration that's being discussed, is how that would impact. Yes?
I'm just going to say, because the one thing I've never read or heard you say is an adjustment to teachers already in a role. Everything that they talked about was a new hire. So it won't be a reduction for anything for us for existing teachers.
Oh, yeah, if that was your question, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Right. It seems to me a lot of the funding that was provided by the federal government was specifically stated that it could not be used to reduce the budgets.
Yes, yes. So. And I think I misunderstood your question.
Right.
If you meant maybe additional things. It would not reduce anything, I don't think, currently that we're doing. Wouldn't impact any of that. It wouldn't be anything that we currently have deployed that we wouldn't need now that we have that.
Yeah, a lot of the federal stimulus money, it's there to supplement or provide extra due to, you know, some of the extra limitations that the pandemic has had on, you know, schools, county. It's not there necessarily as a revenue offset or anything like that, and it's very targeted for what you can use those funds for generally.
And some of the positions, of course, are warranted due to the impact of having to teach in a hybrid environment as well too. So presumably once we're out of a COVID situation, those demands for hybrid education would drop.
Yeah. Any other questions for me or any other information that you, I'm happy to come back with more.
No, sir. Thank you for coming in this evening.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Have a great evening.
Thank you.
All right. Next up is D, October head tax update. Mr. Spitzer. I'm guessing that Mr. Sorrells.
Good evening. Yeah, I'm going to pass this over to Mr. Sorrells. He's the chairman of the ATEC committee, so he would like to. Any other questions I can answer after he's done?
All right.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yep.
Hello, members of the board. Happy October. First off, thank you for your service to Fluvanna County. You guys have a hard job, and I appreciate it, as do the other citizens of Fluvanna County. I'm here to give our update on our October update. We do this twice a year. We did it in April this year, and we're doing it here in October. Really just to let you know what we've been doing for the Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council. It is exciting to hear that Jennifer's been hired. Welcome to Fluvanna. I understand you come from Albemarle. I'm an Albemarle alum myself. We have, first off, we've had about five or six meetings since our April update to the board. We started having our in-person meetings again in July, which were great. We just in general, EdTech's now been around for about 5 years, and so it's continuing to add value to the economic development position and to events and activities occurring in Fluvanna. We've got 12 members on the committee, ranging from representatives of the chamber to the Historical Society, to the Farm Bureau, and those have all been very good appointments and very good members to have on this committee. Just to review some of the things we've been doing, in September, we provided a letter of support for the VDOT TAP grant that Douglas was working on, and we've also been working on getting the word out about the Parks and Rec events occurring this fall, the Halloween event, Trunk or Treat, as well as the Christmas lighting or holiday lights that will be happening later on in December. Other big thing that we've been working on in September and will for 2022, we'll be updating the Tourism Strategic Plan. The first one that we worked on was 2018 to 2020, and now we are in 2021. So we're going to need to update that for 2022, probably through 2024. And what our committee has had an interest in focusing on or highlighting from things that we haven't done in the past, of course, we'll bring this back to you guys for approval, is a desire to add a focus on the Palmyra Village area. This is something that with the Transportation Enhancement Grant that VDOT, that the county's working with VDOT, as well as the historic courthouse renovations that are going to be occurring, just makes sense to really, and also to, you know, we had the group that Palmyra Revitalization Group, sort of their work effort has sort of come over to EdTech in terms of the, once that group, I guess, dissolved, then the some of the folks that had served on that, but some of the work that they had been doing became EdTech's responsibility. So anyhow, that's just something that the committee has, several members of our committee have indicated a desire to work on. Additionally, focusing on African-American heritage in Fluvanna, that's something that, you know, there's an opportunity to better focus on that in Fluvanna and to highlight that. And so that's some additional things that we'd like to put into to the plan before we bring it back to you. But again, we'll be reviewing that, revising that, working with Jennifer to make sure that's something that everybody is in agreement with before we bring it back to you. In August, we EdTech ran the Home Arts competition for the fair, and the sheriff was a very kind judge for the baked goods judging contest, which is always a perk. And he did a great job, by the way. Well, we only had three entries, unfortunately. Oh. But he did taste all of those things. And
no argue with him. He wears
who got first, second, and third?
Well, clearly the folks that entered all got award. But there was a really, really good cake. So the bottom line is, through the membership of the Farm Bureau, George Goyne serving on EdTech, he brought up, and also Aaron, that you know, with COVID and with, you know, retirements and just people moving on from other things, there wasn't anybody to run the Home Arts competition at the fair. And my own kids have enjoyed that, and my family has participated in the past. And, you know, when they said that, that seemed like something that would be a good fit for EdTac to really help out with. And it was a good fit. We were able to successfully run that at the fair. We had about 75 entries, about two dozen youth entries. And since this was our first year, it was a learning phase. So, you know, we had to figure out when we needed a lot of people, when we didn't need a lot of people. And I also quickly learned that I need to make sure that the baked goods judges have forks and knives so they can taste things. But anyhow, it was a good experience. And I did want to give a special shout out to Kathleen Kilpatrick on EdTac and Trisha Johnson on EdTac. They really helped find expert judges on all the categories. You know, we didn't just have judges for, you know, for quilts or for produce or things like that. They didn't know what they were looking at. We had people that were extension agents or people that was their main thing they did. And it took a lot of effort to get those judges, pull all those judges together, get them there at a certain time. And then we also just had people manning the booth from EdTac. And so, again, it was a great experience. It'll be better next year. We'll have more categories, and it'll even be a little bit more streamlined. So that was a good experience. I'm glad we did it, and I'd like to do it again next year. I'm also serving on the fair board now as, you know, to work on the home arts portion. So that's sort of another way in which I can represent EdTac and the county on that fair board. Let's see here. And then, you know, we also helped Brian before he left with the alphabet book, which was basically, you know, a kid's book for things in Flavanna of, I don't know if that's been published yet or that was something that is to be released, but basically something that I don't want to take away any thunder, but it was something that highlighted Flavanna things for us. And I'll keep it short. That's all I had. We will be meeting next on November 8th, and Mrs. Eager is the board rep on that, on the committee, and she represents the board well and makes sure that the board brings good feedback and good perspective from the board to the committee. So we have pretty good quick meetings. Try to keep them at an hour and get people in and out, and we've had pretty good attendance of our members, so that that hasn't been a problem recently. So, happy to answer any questions if you happen to have any, but looking forward to a good year in 2022 and to update the tourism strategic plan as well.
What are your plans for African American Heritage? What's the date?
Well, we had a great experience in doing the cookbook. Yes, mm-hmm. That was something that Nina Monroe helped with, and mm-hmm. That was a really great success. There's a lot of people interested in that. It really, you know, on social media, people shared it a lot. Right now, it's open as to what that vision would be for African American Heritage, but it's an opportunity. Flavanna's been excellent at preserving its historical heritage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have not highlighted African American historical heritage in our tourism aspects in the past, and I think that it's something that we can should highlight. For the last 50 years, we've focused a lot on old white people, and it's time to focus on the rest of the county as well. And so I think that there's opportunity there, and I think people are interested in it, and there's an opportunity for folks to learn more about the people that have made Flavanna special. Okay. So, but that's to be determined, and if you have any feedback on that, Mrs. Booker,
please. I'd like to be a part of it.
Okay,
Wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity, and definitely as we pull together that in the tourism strategic plan, we'll make sure that we loop you in and make sure that Ms. Eager has an opportunity to let you know about it, too.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate all the work you guys did.
Yes, all right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
I'm going to pop on out.
E, compensation and classification study, Ms. Snow.
Good evening, Chair and Board members. You're good.
Sleep of the wheel.
This evening, we would like to just discuss and provide compensation and classification study information for moving forward on the compensation classification study. The study would include an overall evaluation of the county's current grade structure, actual salaries compared with other relevant competitors, and a possibly a recommended restructuring, if necessary, of the county's compensation structure for administrative classifications and recommendations for implementing proposed changes. This would allow the county to attract and retain a talented workforce at market rates. The last compensation study that was approved by the Board of Supervisors was September 3rd, 2008. As we're moving into the FY23 budget process, this will assist the staff and board to address compensation for the county staff. Questions?
I would like to hear a study on the tax rate.
On tax rate?
Yeah. Throughout the area. See how that compares.
So the one thing, we had all the stuff coming forward from the Sheriff's Department. So this would be a comprehensive compensation study for all county positions, with the exception of social services, since they do not follow our pay bands and our compensation structure or our personnel policies. But again, we haven't done this in quite some time. And as I spoke to the board about, there are many positions we are behind in, and we just need to be competitive with our neighbors and to keep and retain talented folks that we have in here in the county. I can tell you that I'm doing double positions because some people leave at times because they can get higher compensation elsewhere. From a paying for the standpoint, I can definitely tell you that from a salary saving standpoint, it would be covered to move forward with this. And we had discussed, and I had discussed with the board before, about wanting to move forward with some type of compensation salary study. But just from the staff standpoint, when you're down people and you can't keep people, it's hard to take on those extra tasks. And again, we haven't done this since September 2008. I just think from a county standpoint, we are overdue for doing it.
So, came up a little bit during the last TJPDC meeting that we had, and several of the other counties expressed the fact that they had also raised their rates due to the sheriff's requests. And I had suggested that maybe it would be appropriate for the county to follow up with the TJPDC to see if maybe there's a benefit in doing a regional compensation study as opposed to just a local one. So
yeah, we go on.
Yeah, so some of I've already spoke with a few just to kind of get an idea of what it would cost. And they also do private sector branch out as well as public, so that the market rates are truly accurate.
Yeah, a lot of these firms that do this, they don't necessarily do regional compensation studies. I mean, now I don't know what the TJPDC had done, but.
Well, they haven't done anything. I was saying that this was a concern and that we were considering it, and that other counties were looking at it as well, too. And I was just saying that it may be something that instead of us funding it alone, that it's done as a regional effort. And I don't know that that's practical to do or not, but it's maybe worth that's worth at least floating the idea by them and seeing, because we might get more bang for our buck.
Yeah, like for instance, I know Orange County,
they're doing one as we speak.
Yeah, they're doing one as we speak right now. I mean, we can get information for you. I mean, I guess the big question for the board is, in some form or another, do we feel that this is warranted and needed?
In the beginning, you had $35,000. Was that a price that we...
That it is. Out of the three that I've reached out to, yes.
Okay, not to exceed.
Not to exceed that. Correct.
We've just put the feelers out with a couple, and that's...
And that was okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Because there's so many positions that are not compatible when you put 5 or 6 counties together. I mean, sometimes we've got a level W-1, W-2, and it's hard. I don't know how they can make it succinct so that your job description may not be...
You are 100% correct.
And that's what they do. They look at position descriptions. They look at what is required, because a planner one in Almoro County may be different than a planner one in Fluvanna County, and what type of work they do and the requirements and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an example.
I think we need one. I didn't realize back in 2008. That's a long time ago. Okay. I think we need one.
Mrs. Zinger?
Yeah, that's fine.
Mr. Weir?
I don't have any problem with it.
Okay.
Before we move forward, we will certainly discuss and see what information we can get on the regional approach. If there's a way to do that, like I said, that would be fantastic. But if not, I think this is something that is a worthwhile effort as we're coming into this budget season, since it hasn't been done formally in quite some time.
I guess I sort of wonder if you're in a rich county and you're a poor county. Isn't there going to be that discrepancy, though? Look at what maybe over in Buckingham, and maybe even here, we can see some discrepancy over in this direction. But yet, if we compare maybe to Charlottesville or some of the other surrounding counties, you know, I think it depends on quite a few variables.
Yeah, we're probably not going to be 100% in line with maybe, as you say, a county that's maybe more well off than us. But I mean, it's a way to start making us at least more competitive and retaining the good employees that we have.
I know you have a problem, but being county administrator, it's tough keeping people, and it's important.
Yep, it's very important. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up is F. VDOT functional road classification, Mr. Miles.
Yes, good evening, Chairman Sheridan, members of the board. We're looking at this as another long-range transportation planning project. So starting off kind of Albemarle in conjunction with Flavanna, we're requesting to change the Thomas Jefferson Parkway, Route 53, and also Richmond Road. Thank you. Route 250, as they both connect to Route 15. At this time, these roads are proposed to be reclassified from major collectors over to minor arterials, and that's in the VDOT functional classification of road system. And Mr. Dahl and I have discussed this with Alan Saunders and Chuck Proctor as leading up to this discussion and presentation. So VDOT uses the functional classifications for road and design funding purposes. It helps them help us to determine the urban network to identify the thoroughfare system itself, and then in the end for VDOT road construction priorities. VDOT's allocation of transportation funding, as it looks at it as for primary roads, which are the arterials, versus collector roads, and then we have our local secondary streets and local roads. So this is a graphic location of basically what we're talking about. As you on 250, as you come out of Albemarle and come down 250 in the Zion Crossroads area and intersect with Route 15, and then from 53 basically up there at Colonial Circle, down all the way down into the roundabout here in Palmyra. So those two road locations are what we're looking at, and what Albemarle's actually already looked at and we've talked about at the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. So this is a map of kind of basically Albemarle created this map and extended it, the information. You'll see that they're doing it around the MPO areas with some of the smaller roads leading into Charlottesville, but then the main areas is Route 250 East coming from the Shadwell area basically into the county. Then from 53 into the county. And the next map is where it extends into us, into the Flavanna area, on the Route 250 corridor connecting with 15, and then Route 53 again connecting with 15 in Palmyra. So the next couple slides will kind of talk about why this is important and what the time frame is for transportation planning and the decennial census. So these two corridors, working with VDOT at both Culpeper and the Louisa Residency, are seeing an increase in development and our major connector roads between what's termed in VDOT's words, the urbanized areas in each county, and then getting over to connect to our minor arterial, which is the north-south corridor, Route 15, in the county. So why this is coming before you now and just came before Albemarle County is a VDOT statewide review of functional classifications typically occurs in, following a decennial census, which we just had. And then the most recent classification update that VDOT performed was in 2014. So it takes them usually about, you know, 3 or 4 years to do all this, so it's important for us to start early. In summary, VDOT staff did indicate these road changes would be beneficial to Flavanna County for any future road funding requests. From a planning perspective, we like to think that it also helps create better gateway corridors into the county from Albemarle and then 15, and, from Louisa. So as I stated, Albemarle County's board did adopt theirs in 2021. And at this point, Mr. Dahl and I would like to bring this forward for you at a future meeting for the VDOT resolution of intent for your consideration. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any question?
I think we need it.
Okay.
Yes, Ian. What do you think about this?
I think it's fine.
Mr. Weaver?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Miles will definitely work, and we'll pull in Mr. Payne's office, and we'll bring a resolution forward for the board for consideration, and then forwarding it down to VDOT.
Thank you.
Good. All right, next up is VDOT right-of-way land acquisition. Mr. Dahl.
So, last one. So, if you all know kind of... we really just want to kind of talk about a piece of land that VDOT owns. So if you know the piece of land right out kind of below the courthouse parking lot there, the kind of the grassy area by 15 and kind of where the old road went over.
Where we still cut the grass.
Where we still cut the grass, where we've been cutting the grass for many years. It's an old residue right-of-way. And we wanted to discuss with VDOT about what we can do to acquire that. Like I said, we're maintaining it. And we would like to get a meeting set up to discuss doing that. And like I said, we were going to do that anyway. We just don't want to go through the motions. If the board says, then we'll know it's not something that we want to do. You know, it's going to have to go through Commonwealth and go through the Department of General Services. And there's going to probably be a value, somewhat of a market value. But I think from a market value standpoint, it's going to be probably minimal considering the type of property that it is. You know, they've got a detailed process and they have certain requirements and reviews that they're going to have to do to determine. So just to kind of look at it again, here's the courthouse and the courthouse parking lot. And here's the county admin building and here's the parcel in question. It's, you know, it's roughly maybe 0.6 acres. I mean, it's not a huge piece of property, but I think as we start moving the transition out of the admin building and, you know, the courts are going to grow at some point, you know, it would be beneficial if there's some additional parking capabilities or anything. It's connected and adjoining our property, and it makes sense to get into the conversations and see what we can do to get it. So I would request that the board kind of head nod for me to move forward and get more information and bring something back.
Yeah, I would think it'd be more beneficial to us than about anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's big enough to buy and put a business there. You wouldn't have line of sight because of the curve and everything else.
Down the road, we can use it, maybe.
Well, I mean, and it probably gets rid of a headache for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, we're already taking care of it as it
is.
It could be a parking lot or anything. You know, it's connected to our parcel. It's adjoining our parcel. It's good frontage right there. And
you've gotten your head nods already.
Well, we're going to do it then. Thank you.
All right. Consent agenda. First up is H, minutes of October 6th, 2021. I, Board of Supervisors, 2021 bylaws and rules of practice. Mr. Dahl. J, FY21 and FY22. FCPS state and federal grant carryover, Ms. Melton. K, mutual aid agreement between Flavanna County and Cumberland County, Ms. Smith. L, approval of open space contract for Gary Glenn Becker, Mr. Sheridan. M, approval of open space contract for Roy Howard and Constance G. Howard, Hazlett. Mr. Sheridan. I'm wondering if that's a mess. Oh, yeah. And N, approval of open space contract for Twyla S. Harvey, Life Estate, Dean Stravell, and Christina Corrigan. Mr. Sheridan. All right. And last is O, CRMF Bobcat Skid Steer Repairs. Mr. Crutcher. Is there anything we want to pull?
No.
Okay, do I have a motion to adopt?
Motion, I move that the move to approve the consent agenda H through O.
Second. Got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Unfinished business.
Just a quick update. As you know, I was the proxy for the John Ford meeting. There was a slate of candidates. There were no real choices there. So voted for the candidates that were in place. But in the process, I did speak with a number of different folks, our two Fluvanna representatives, Mr. Morgan and Mrs. Evans, as well as the TJPDC director, just to get some feedback. And in general, everybody sort of shared the same concern that I think many of the boards have had with regard to how John is managing things. But I stayed on after that meeting to listen to the actual regular meeting, and it did seem like the overall board was taking those concerns very seriously. They had a recent report from Transportation Regional Board that was also not very flattering in terms of some of the estimates of the traffic numbers they were putting forward. But the board's addressing that, and I certainly feel that our representatives are excellent. Mr. Morgan said he would be happy to present to the entire board, and I think that's probably something that we might want to hear from.
They have a director now?
They do. They just hired one. That was one of them.
Yeah. And what's Karen doing?
She's going to stay on board as the chief operating officer.
Okay. Good.
So that's all I have to say. Was it the offer was made, and I said I thought that was probably a good idea, and that the board would love to hear from them.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything else under unfinished?
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead.
I don't know if it's unfinished or not, but the signs, the street signs that are down, whose responsibility is to put those up? And I've spoken to Eric, I think I spoke to you before. These are the blue signs.
You mean the address signs? Or
yeah,
the, or
like
the,
that's along your road.
No, the actual road signs.
Road signs, not the
Could
you step to the microphone, Sheriff? Thank you, sir. I want to make sure everybody can hear your answer.
How will you tell?
The answer is yes, ma'am. The 911 center under Director Cranstaff, he handles all that. Usually what happens, somebody calls it in, or when the deputies see that it's been knocked down, they'll call it in, and he'll schedule it. And once they have so many signs to repair, they come and do that. Yes, ma'am.
Well,
same with the new construction and stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't just run out and do it for one sign.
Okay.
You said that's along
the road. It's been down. I don't even know if the sign is still there. It was in the ditch.
So what I'll do, and if you follow up, I'll try and send Mr. Grandstaff an email just reminding about that sign.
Yeah. Stop signs and speed limit signs.
VDOT usually on the stop signs, as soon as we call them in, they've got a crew that works every day. Mm-hmm. So they usually get out there and get those done. Another lag time has been getting the materials for those new signs, as well as the increased costs for just about everything. Mm-hmm.
But stop sign down in the town of Columbus, when I come out, I never noticed anybody stop. When you come up onto State Junction Road?
Right. They need a trim one coming off of North Boston there. You can't, if you didn't know there was a stop sign there, the tree limbs have grown out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that one's gone. Okay. And I thought about that if somebody were to come through there and not realize where they're going.
Which one? You said State
Lafayette? It's the back road.
Yeah, the back road. If you're coming out of the state.
If you're coming out across the bridge, you come straight up on Old Columbia and just keep straight. And it comes out over on, I think it's Lafayette.
That's all.
Maybe.
Yes.
Well, when it comes out on State Junction, there's no stop sign. Everybody that drives it knows you better stop.
Right.
Because there might be a logging truck coming down the road.
And that's usually the culprits that take them out.
One last one.
Yes.
Somebody said something to me the other day. On Courthouse Road, when you leave Palmyra, it's got the 40-mile-per-hour sign, and it used to be at the parsonage and 40-mile-an-hour sign. Mm-hmm. That got knocked down. But if you look on the other side of the road, it says begin 40.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. I mean,
we'll look at that one too.
That could lead to a headache for somebody down the road.
Have to let VDOT know on that one.
Yeah. That one's right there, you know, 400 yards away from the bank. It's before you get to George's Mill.
George's Mill.
Yeah, because one of my kids was driving 40 the whole time the other day on that road, and I went.
That was over there where we had a recent fatality.
Yes, sir. Just past that. So I don't know if they want to reduce it for the whole road, but it's. Yeah, it's got a begin 40-mile-an-hour sign right across the road where the old one used to be. Because there's no 40-mile-an-hour sign on the Wilmington.
We'll check on that, too.
Yes, sir. Thank you
all much. Sure.
When you start talking about that, that's one thing, like I said before, driving around in a driver's aid car. I get asked questions to see that.
I'm going to send you notes when I have twice when you ride in my area and check back on me.
Absolutely. I got to ride somewhere. Okay.
All right.
I drive down Thessalonica.
I'm going to take my club down and check on it.
I can go to work part-time for Mr. Miles, helping him out with the 911 address. All right. Any other, Mr. Weaver?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the resolution on the live organ transplant. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be kind of nice if the board had that resolution.
I can't imagine that going on.
What is going on, like that, and those poor individuals here and all, and they've personally seen some of that go on. And I think it's good once in a while just stand up and say, hey, it's all right. I mean,
this is wrong.
I'm sure 95% of people believe it's wrong, but why doesn't the board just stand up?
Yeah, I agree.
I got no problem with that.
Thank you for bringing that up.
If you can take care of that.
Yep, we will, like I said, and it sounds like they said that some of our neighbors.
Louisa
approved some
yeah,
resolution.
They have
Louisa's
in the packet.
Okay.
And I was going to suggest I was going to bring that up in the next meeting. I was going to actually try to watch some of this and do some research on it. But staff, you're welcome to do that. It certainly seems legitimate. They have 3 Nobel Peace Prize candidates on there. I assume it's all correct, but just I'm always sort of thinking that we should. Just validate what we're being asked to do there. But absolutely, it seems, you know, unimaginable, as Mr. Sheridan said.
People can badmouth the United States a lot. But at least you have the freedom to believe what you want to believe. Somebody might say something dumb, but you can't do anything about stupid.
Yep.
But that.
Certainly glad to be aware of it, for sure. So I think I said it.
Half of what they said is correct.
Right, exactly.
Half. Not even half.
Yep.
A tenth.
Yep.
I bring it up. Okay. Any new business?
That was me.
That's how we hit the door.
I've been ready to get under the table.
I'm too tired to get under the table. They just walked in. The major was already reflexing back in. The sheriff's still laughing. He's still in a food coma from where he was the judge. Seeing no new business.
Ever had anything, God forbid, to come in here and a problem, what do we do? I mean, do we have a method of how we get out of here? The elevator there. What's that? Oh, that's Blackwood.
There's one to the back too.
Yeah. Say a prayer that Major doesn't miss.
Oh wow.
I mean that's food for thought.
We probably ought to
go through where the exits are.
No,
I don't know if there's one back here, but
right. If
it was bad enough, I might make one.
But you know, it's better here than the courthouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It put us at a stretch.
Yep.
Well, do you pray something like that never happens?
Well,
like I tell the children at school, you look around the room, you see whatever you could have around you you could throw, and then we play Friday ball. Don't miss.
Yep.
That's the first thing, flip the desk, flip the table. Mm-hmm. And at least slow the bullet down.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we went down off track. I'm tired. I'm going to ramble. All right. But that's a good point. I mean, we probably ought to have an exit access, knowledge of all the exits in the room. Yes, ma'am. But like I tell the children, use these holding pens. We've got these books, and sometimes they're a lot thicker than what they are today. Hold those in front of you. Mm-hmm. That will stop a small arms bullet.
Yeah.
I tell them, y'all told me that. Put your book bags on in front.
Mm-hmm.
Or whichever direction the shooter is coming from.
Right.
I'm just going to stand behind you.
That's enough. Like I said, I don't move too fast anymore. I used to be able to run. All right. Sorry about that, folks. We went a little downhill on that one. All right. Hearing no new business, I will not.
No, Mr. Chair.
Oh, my gosh. Mr. Dahl.
Sorry, Mr.
Budget
Chair.
Time's coming, folks.
Really quick. So Mr. Spitzer is running into a little bit of an issue for consistency. So we've got some programs that we're running through the schools using their gymnasiums. As you're, Mr. Chair, as you're well aware, the schools have different masking requirements for what they're doing at the schools and in their gymnasiums than what we're doing at the county level. So we've got some programs for older kids that are going on at the middle school that have masking requirements. For the spectators and those that are not playing in the games. We don't have any here for the Carysburg Gym currently for the young kids. He would like to request that we, even though we don't have anything countywide, that we have something at the gym for those kids and families that are in the Carysburg Gym that would have to wear a mask if you're in the stands or if you're not playing in the game at the time. Like I said, we don't have anything from an enforcement standpoint countywide, but just kind of making it fair and clear across the board, unless the board has any major pushback on that.
Are there meetings? Are they wearing masks at the meetings?
School board meetings? I can't, I can speak on, yes. I mean, so is everyone wearing masks? No.
Okay. And board members aren't wearing masks, or some are?
Some are and some aren't.
I'm just sort of curious where they are.
Yep.
I think what they're getting at is it's
sort of like
a volleyball game at the high school. If you're in the crowd, you have to wear a mask. Come on up, Mr. Spitzer.
Good evening again. So our concern is, I got 11 to 17 year old kids and their parents have to wear a mask because we play in schools. That's where those kids play. They practice at Carysburg Elementary and they play at the middle school. They're actually gonna get a game at the high school this year, which is great. But the parents and the kids have to wear a mask in school because it's a requirement in schools if they're not on the court. We want to be able to let parents and kids know this is a requirement before they sign up with us, so everything's straightforward. We have no control over the school, what we do in the school. Our gym, 7 to 10-year-olds, technically right now would not be required to wear a mask because the county does not enforce that. Well, it puts my program at strains maybe because the little kids don't have to wear a mask, but the big kids do. So I'd like to make my program uniform. And the reason why I'm asking for the mask is because I have to with the big kids, if that makes sense. I don't have to with the little kids because of the county. But in order for us to regulate what happens and be fair, I mean, I'm going to tell you, we have parents with little kids that are going to go to the high school game, like to the older kids game, and then it can come back. So... It'd be confusion through our program And I'd just like to make it consistent. Not that I want to require it, but I have to for the older kids. So I like to make my program consistent so we can let everybody know what to expect. We have not done this last year, so it is new to us this year. And I met with Mr. Morris, the AD at the school, and kind of found out how they were doing basketball. If you're not on the court, you're required to wear a mask in the schools, like when they play. We're going to have to require that while we play for older kids. I can't do anything about that. But I want to be able to make sure our younger kids are doing the same things our older kids. It would make our job easier as professionals to be able to do that way.
Being consistent.
It for that program. I'm not asking for any other program we're doing because we don't have that issue. We have that issue because we're using a school. It's the only reason I'm asking for this one program.
So let me ask you a question.
So
with the consistency, so what other programs do we have that we wouldn't require that for?
Well, so we have Little Tykes Mighty Mites basketball that goes on in our gym. Three to 6-year-olds. It's in our gym. We wouldn't require it. I can't require that because it's in our gym. We don't have that policy. It's not like our basketball league, because that is a 6-week program that happens before our league. Our basketball league is a 10-week program. And for 10 weeks, I have to require the older kids to wear masks. So is it right to make them wear a mask and not our little kids in the same league we're playing in? I don't know. But I know I'm going to get this question. So I'm looking for some advice. And I will let you know we're working on our young ladies' Valentine's ball, which we do in the school. We are looking at not serving food, but still doing it in the school. But they would be required to wear a mask while they're at that program. But we want to keep programs going. The only way we can do that, because we don't have space, is to use schools. So when I have to use somebody else's facility, I have to abide by the rules. I don't have a choice. So I'm just trying to make it fair for my whole program.
Well, I mean, to be consistent instead of...
Not fair, but consistent for my program.
To be consistent with a program at the Carriersburg Gym, I guess you could say that any program going on at the Carriersburg Gym, if you're a spectator in the stands or not playing the sport at the time, you have to wear a mask in that facility.
And it's just for Saturdays. I mean, it'd be for practice and games. But right now, we have open gym right now, and I don't require a mask in the open gym because we don't have a mask mandate. But I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I need some help, and I need your help.
We are too.
I understand, but it's going to be brought on me, and I'm going to have to come to you sooner or later to ask you if I can do this. So I'd rather get ahead of the game before we even start our league.
I think what you're saying is sooner or later it's going to come to us and have to make a decision on it. We're going to make them wear a mask in the bleachers.
Well, I will at the schools. But I won't at Carriersburg right now.
Well, that's not our decision at the schools.
No, it's not. That's why I have to at the schools.
Trust me, I wear one every day.
I know, I have to at the schools. I don't have a choice when we play at the schools.
I think it makes sense to be consistent.
But if you don't have to, let the little children play without masks.
Well, they can play without it.
They all play without a mask. When they go to the bench or the parents in the stands that I'm asking to be consistent with. Like our referees, if they're not on the court refereeing, if they're taking a break, they're required to wear a mask while they're sitting down behind the bench. All of my staff will be required to wear a mask while they're doing scorekeeping. Monitoring in the gym at the school, I have to require them to wear a mask while they're doing that because that's a school mandate.
I understand that it's a school mandate, but it's not a Carriersburg mandate.
It is not, but I would like... Because we have kids that are old and young and the same parents, have a 7-year-old and an 11-year-old. One's going to be playing in one gym, one's going to be playing in the other. How do you tell one that they have to do one and one that they don't when you want to try to make it consistent over the whole program? That is my concern. I'm here to do what you tell me to do.
Yeah, I mean,
and I can tell parents this is what we discussed. But I'm going to get questions. I know I am. So I'm trying to get ahead of the game because we start evaluations November 8th, which is 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, I think it's either. You either say anyone that is in Carriersburg Gym, you keep it specific to Carysburg Gym, and anyone that is not actually playing a physical sport in Carysburg Gym has to wear a mask. I mean, that's, I think if you're being consistent, that's the only way. Or you just say,
or our winter basketball program, you're required to wear a mask if you're playing or spectating in our winter basketball program.
So let me ask you this. If the kids at the high school are playing basketball, they have to wear a mask.
If they're not playing.
If they're not playing on the court.
If they're not on the court. If they're on the bench. The 10 kids are warming up before the game, right? They do not have to wear a mask because they're on the court warming up. As soon as they go to the bench, they have to have a mask on.
When wearing gym class, if you're exercising or running, you don't have to have a mask on. As soon as you stop, you have to put a mask on.
It's tough. It's not easy for us to be able to try to run programs like this, but we're trying to provide for the community. So I just need some advice on what to do.
What do you want to do?
I want to make it consistent. Why would I have older?
Let's make it consistent.
I mean,
and I think what he's saying is, so if you've got a child that's 7,
mm-hmm.
and another one, hang on, Ms. Booker, mm-hmm. and another one is 14, the 14-year-old has to do that, and the 7-year-old doesn't.
I understand.
Just to keep a headache down from the parents.
I mean, I have a parent that has 3 kids. One's going to be 8, one's going to be 10, and one's going to be 12.
So 2 of them will be playing in the
older. The younger, and one will be playing in the older. I don't want to make anybody do anything. I don't think that's right. But I have to do it for the school, so I'd like to make my program consistent. I've always tried to make everything I've done consistent, so there's no questions about what happens if you go into a program we do. And if we do this, then you're going to have, well, I don't have to wear it at Carysbrook, so why do I have to come over here and wear it? Because you're in the school. But I'm going to have that problem that I'm going to have to talk to every Saturday. When I can say, before you sign up for our league, this is our requirements. If you don't like it, please don't sign up for our league. And I'm sorry, but that's how we have to run it this year to be able to have a league. And we've already limited our league to Fluvanna residents only. So we are not allowing Charlottesville, Louisa, anybody else coming into our league. So we've already limited what we're doing. But I'm just trying to make it consistent.
Yeah, no,
it's like, and I can't make that decision. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, again, countywide, we're just, I mean, we haven't done it countywide, but, you know, this is only a special circumstance for this one building.
Just the program.
It's just the program. Quits.
Like I said, I can't do anything about this.
Well, if we do this, I would put language in there that if the school board changes their policy, we immediately cancel ours.
Then that's great. And it's only for my basketball program. It's not for any other program I run. It's just for the basketball. Just for basketball. Practice and games from December 1st through March 15th is what it is. One night a week and Saturday.
Mr. Weaver, any other comments?
No, I just... You know, it's hard on everyone, and you are in the middle.
I am.
And,
yeah. So it's either,
and I understand, and maybe you being in the middle, I don't necessarily feel that way, but for your sake and the county's sake, sometimes you don't have a choice.
And that's why I'm asking for guidance.
Yes, I'd like some guidance, too.
The one thing that I always tell every young teacher that I'm around is be consistent. Because when you're consistent, people understand what expectations are.
That's true.
And can conform to it. I hate to use the word conform. But they understand it and they deal with it. If that's your expectations, that's what we try to do in the gym. And, I mean, we had a kid wearing a mask the other day. Didn't take it off while he was running.
I mean, I think no matter which way you go, you're going to get some pushback one way or the other. You're going to get feedback. If you don't do it, you're going to get feedback. You're probably going to get feedback if it is done, but again, it can certainly be said that they are consistent with their program and what they're doing with all their programs. So, like I said, no. The
classes in high school and all, are they wearing masks now in the classroom?
Yes. My son's in the 8th grade. He wears a mask from the time he goes in the building.
In the classroom?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
They're all required to. If
your classroom's not required to wear it the whole time as us.
So that's the school board's discretion, right?
Yes, sir.
I think it was, didn't the state make the school all when you're inside of school, you must wear a mask. So even at their athletic events, they're required to wear a mask. Like people in the stands are required to wear a mask. If you're indoors.
If you're indoors. Outside, as long as you try to keep socially distanced, they let you go without.
That is why we have been programming most of our programs outdoors. Because we don't have to.
Polar bear basketball.
We've done everything we could. To do outdoor events.
Would we need to do a motion of some type?
No. I mean, it's the
question. Eric can handle this.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Ms. Eager?
I think it's one mistake or another.
Yes.
Because the county doesn't have this policy, and they can come to the meetings and wear a mask or not wear a mask. But, so, you know, it's either all or nothing.
You don't have a choice, hardly. That's the thing about it.
Yeah, that's the only thing that sways me with this, is it? Just to be consistent.
Being consistent from one area to another.
Yes, sir. But it's also merit to your personal rights.
As long as you don't have to put it on my personal rights.
There you go.
Okay. We know how to move forward.
Thank you.
All righty. Anything else? Since you've now ruined my mood, Mr. Dahl.
I do it sometimes.
I know. It's just the way you
not too many.
Not too many, but sometimes.
All right. Now I will close the new business. I will now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wish to address the board? Please state your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? Anyone online, Caitlin?
Nope.
Seeing or hearing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. We've already done our closed meeting. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We are adjourned.